So.
I got trouble brewing in my coffee pots. There's no sugar in my bowl. Suppose the tax man came and gave it all away. My head is pounding. No, bill don't ever stop. Got no dog for my bone. Somebody said it's supposed to be another gravy day today. Been twisted and broken. Things just ain't what they used to be. Been twisted and broken. Somewhere I lost my American dream. Somewhere I lost my American dream. Well, time bombs are ticking. One's about to go off. Terrorists are everywhere. I hear they got a hideout down at Channel 8, you know. Every time I get up to turn my TV on, one of those guys smiles at me and tell me what the survey says to think today. Yeah, been twisted and broken. Yeah, things just ain't what they used to be. Been twisted and broken. Somewhere I lost my American dream. Somewhere I lost my American dream. Birthday in 1952, and I still ain't the president, and there were no heroes from the Vietnam War. Sometimes I sleep in the back of my car, but you know that's against the rules. The rent just gets so damn high. And the boss man says, 7 days of work will do you good. Been twisted and broken. Things just ain't what they used to be. Been twisted and broken. Somewhere I lost my American dream. Somewhere I lost my American dream.
That's right.
I say, a bit twisted and broken. Things just ain't what they used to be. A bit twisted and broken. Somewhere I lost my American dream. Somewhere I lost that American dream.
I think that was Twisted and Broken. The names aren't on the disc. But that's Mike True. Mike is one of the founders of the Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, a protection for street performers group that formed in Santa Cruz in 2003. Mike actually won a lawsuit against Sergeant Lauren Butchie Baker for thousands of dollars when Baker falsely arrested him for selling his CDs on the street. Actually, he was, I think, putting them up for donation, but the actual ruling of courts has been that if it is your own product in writing or selling or painting, you have a right to sell it. You don't need a license, and you are improperly restricted. Maybe they can restrict time, place, and manner, but I don't even think Santa Cruz has done that in terms of having a real process by which someone can get a permit to sell on the streets in any regular way. I've never seen that. There's a permit for being able to use a space, but not for selling. And maybe that's something the Santa Cruz City Council didn't want to do 10 years ago, doesn't want to do now. And so Baker, eager to just drive away people, as police officers often do, they kind of creatively overinterpret the rules, or should we say extend the rules. Mike True was told to... I don't even know if he was told to move along. I know he was arrested. He was one of several True brothers who lived around here. He's moved. I think he was in New Orleans for a while, and he's maybe somewhere else now. He's occasionally called into the show. And he's a singer. And he's also a successful freedom fighter, as you might call it, here in the kind of a, you might say it's a small sort of struggle. It's a small stage on which to fight here in Santa Cruz. But it's one which... we're on, those of us who live here in town and who want to see the town still open to artistic expression, the realities of poverty when it's in front of our eyes, not to hide it, not to conceal it, not to criminalize those so as to make merchants feel they can more effectively create illusions that will lure the rich. That is something that I think Santa Cruz, with its history of counterculture, certainly used to support, and parts of Santa Cruz still support that. Perhaps a significant portion, although a lot of people are being driven out of town by the rents, by the foreclosures, by the police crackdowns, by the unemployment, all that stuff has its impact. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. I'm Robert Norse. This show is called Bathrobespierre's Broadsides. You may have heard of Robespierre in the French Revolution. I'm Bathrobespierre. That is, I wear a bathrobe to protests and even to court appearances occasionally to protest how homeless people are criminalized at night and to mock it as well, to mock the fact that the authorities are so stupid and so cruel and so outrageously, insensible to basic human rights and needs as to make it a crime in Santa Cruz to sleep after 11 o'clock at night under the municipal code, 6.36010A, but also more recently to use state laws, 647E, the state anti-lodging law, to criminalize people who sleep at night. Mostly, however, to criminalize people who protest at night by sleeping or who are there at night and maybe fall asleep or can be accused of planning to fall asleep or, quote, lodging. Even though they're there for a political purpose, you would think it's supported by the First Amendment. It's done next to a government building. This was used extensively against Occupy Santa Cruz last fall and against the prior protest, Peace Camp 2010, that was there in the summer of 2010, protesting the treatment of Robert Blind Bear Facer and other homeless people in court, homeless people who were disabled or elderly or just plain homeless. Unhoused, if you will, displaced urban residents in many cases, who simply the police decided to harass, not necessarily on complaint, just because they could, just because they felt like it, just because that was their mood of the day. And I'm not trying to say police are any worse than you or I as human beings, but once people get into that whole police mentality, institutional framework, the power tends to make one, distorts one's priorities, I think, makes one think that somehow one has the responsibility to be abusive, where abusive, of course, is something they deny they're doing because they're told it's legal, it's the law, so it can't be abusive, right? And that's sort of a double evil, because not only are they being abusive, but they're denying their own humanity in so doing, and of course denying the humanity of other people. And that's the main focus of my show, and has been for 20 years. The show actually hasn't gone on for 20 years. We're going on 20 years. We started in 1995 here in Santa Cruz with Free Radio. Been going ever since. I often wonder whether the radio is a project worth continuing. Our signal is very weak outside the city. I was driving into the city today, and it was hard to hear, very hard to hear, until I got down to, I don't know, was it Highway 1 or so. But we're still here. These shows are still here. I do this show twice a week, and I archive the shows in case people want to go back and hear them again for some reason or hear a portion of them, because I often put on interviews from people on the streets, homeless people, poor people, as well as select juicy or rotting segments from government body meetings of different kinds. I haven't been doing much of that lately. In fact, my city council CDs or DVDs are piling up. Sorry about that. I've got to had to deal with something, but I'm back. So if you want to, you can call into the show if you have reports. I'm particularly concerned with the harassment of homeless people outside in the most recent police crackdown. And they actually, police actually have a hotline that they're encouraging people to snitch on those who are in survival homeless encampments, which they're calling illegal camping. And you can call in, as someone is just doing right now, at 831-427-3772. 427-3772. And let's hear what our caller has to say. Yo there, first caller of the morning. How are you?
I am a little hoarse. It's good. I'm hearing your stream fine. Signal's weak, of course, but we can hear it on the stream, and just called in because I heard Mike True.
Oh, yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Go ahead.
Yeah. All right. I'm hearing you. I'm going to shut the door so I can hear it in real time. All right.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Definitely should turn off your...
Yeah, I'm in the other room now.
Okay.
So, yeah, I was checking to see if you were live, and definitely you are, because I heard you say that you are live.
I am live, and I am alive, both, yeah.
The chances are that the antenna is going to be coming and be broadcasting at a fuller, reachable volume soon to all the cities. Well, the Santa Cruz, Soquel area, maybe as far as halfway to Watsonville.
Wow.
As soon as
yeah.
it gets installed.
The antenna. But I thought our problem was we had a very low transmitter, like 13 watts or something. But is it?
Yeah, that'll be increased when the new equipment arrives and is installed. Isn't that your understanding?
I don't know. I'm really a rare attender of the meetings. I think last meeting I was at was about a month ago, but or more.
Now the meetings will be held on Mondays, and it'll still be at the old resource center until further notice.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah, they used to be open to the public, but, I don't want to call them paranoid necessarily, but because the FCC has made its occasional sally into the station to try to destroy our communication system here. But not recently so much. It hasn't been happened since 2004 in any real way. There have been a couple threats, and I think we've had to move from one landlord to another. Coral, I know that you are a broadcaster on Tuesday, and often, to my regret, I don't listen into your show. I forget about it. Sometimes, particularly when I'm called by you or your co-host to talk about stuff, I do, listen to some of it. Has there been anything in the last couple of weeks that people who regularly listen to this show should know about? And has it been archived anywhere? And maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
There's going to be a show with Brent Adams very soon again. Due to not a lot of people being able to hear the shows, I've had not as many shows, nor my partner free, but that's going to change, and we're going to have guests, one person from El Salvador, if I can get that up. And it hasn't, I did the recording, and then he will call in again from El Salvador. He's there helping the community, and that was an interesting interview I did. So he's going to call and do part two of the interview.
I guess your show is on Tuesdays at Tangerine
now,
Dream Team, right?
We still allow people to come in from 6 to 7 for any part of the public that wants to announce anything. From 6 to 7 news, you call that news. Then from 7 to 9, we have our regular show on Tuesdays.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning that a couple of years ago. Even you, I know Free was very concerned with having a news hour. In fact, he would like to have seen that more kind of daily.
I think that was about a year ago we got that set up.
Was it a year ago? Wow, I thought it was. Time goes maybe slowly for me. I think it's too fast.
Time's just different.
Yeah. So 6 to 7 on Tuesdays. How can people who want to come in get in touch with you, since our studio is in a secret location?
They can, of course, call the Huff Line, but they can also reach me if they'd like to be a guest.
And you want to give out your number, or do you want to do it through the Huff Line?
The Huff Line's fine. They can email me. A lot of people do that, since probably listening to this on the stream, but if they email to coralreef887@yahoo.com and say they want to come in at 6 o'clock on Tuesday.
So that's coralreef887@yahoo.com. Coral, C-O-R-A-L-R-E-E-F, 887@yahoo.com.
That's it.
Uh-huh. Or they can call the Huff Line. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is also my number, which is 831-423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833.
And
yeah.
As for the rest of your show, we'll just have to listen and find out what's going to be on today, or do you have any plans?
It's kind of... I think we're going to be playing some more of the Berkeley City Council's historic discussion of some weeks ago when almost the entire community, well, almost every speaker opposed the Mayor Bates's successful attempt to ram through the sitting ban initiative, which is a sort of a weakened version of the Santa Cruz law, which has been on the books for almost two decades now, the sitting ban that... I call it the sitting ban. It's actually a severe restriction on sitting throughout business areas, commercial zones, downtown, boardwalk. It makes it illegal to sit on 95% of the sidewalk. And Berkeley has a law currently, I think, about lying down on the sidewalk. But now they want to putting on the ballot an initiative that would allow the voters to make it illegal to sit between the hours of 7 in the morning, I think, and 10 at night, something like that. In Santa Cruz, it's illegal 24 hours a day. So if you're sitting in front of a vacant building at 3 in the morning, that's a crime in Santa Cruz. Show you how stupid and incredibly abusive and how powerful the merchant interest is in creating laws that usurp public spaces that really belong to everybody. And it's just, it's kind of a scandal, but so far it's a scandal that has not gotten the traction to create the change that we need, so... I'll be having the Berkeley City Council stuff on, which I began some weeks ago. And I'll be playing some street interviews. And I have some other surprises. I don't know how big the surprises are. My stuff is often very predictable. But I do try to just kind of provide a voice, as you know, for the folks who don't usually get to talk, except perhaps on your show and mine.
Yep. Well... That's what we have to do.
Yeah, I'll be doing updates, such as they are, on the Santa Cruz 11. But there aren't really too many updates, though we may have some surprises coming up there, too, which we'll be talking about more next show. And we'll see what happens, aside from those. Those are just the tidbits I will throw at you so you can gulp them down.
Very good. I'll tune in.
All right, Coral. We'll help folks tune into your show.
Thank you.
And that will be Tuesday, 6 to 7, if you want to go into the studio or call into the studio with news updates.
That's right. Yeah.
And you can reach Coral at coralreef887@yahoo.com, and you can also give a call to me at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Thanks.
Cool, Robert.
Hey, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And, like that. So, phone lines are open, 427-3772. Let's hear a little bit more from Mr. True, Mike True, the...
But now, this next song is just kind of a reality check. It's called When Pigs Can Fly. My kids were talking about virtual reality. I flashed back to 69 when Neil first walked the moon. Like thousands of folks, I saw those footprints in the dust and heard it was a hoax done in a TV studio. About that time I started thinking, how do we know what's real? It's a fact, you can't always trust your eyes. One old man was laughing, yeah, and we'll be farming on Mars someday when pigs can fly. If horses had wings, then pigs could fly. If it can't be, it isn't. But these are strange times. They say anything is possible. Yeah, I know that's true. But I'd check it out real close if I were you. I'd check it out real close if I were you. Every morning when I wake up, something else has changed. Things keep getting wilder, never know what's coming next. On radio, video, television, you know, it's all the same. A world of sound bites, stage rights, and special effects. From salesmen to politicians, what a tangled web they weave. Computer-generated imagery, illusions for the mind. It's really getting harder to know what to believe. And there's a farmer out in Iowa who says his pigs can fly. If horses had wings, then pigs could fly. If it can't be, it isn't. But these are strange times. They say anything is possible. Yeah, I know that's true. But I'd check it out real close if I were you. If horses had wings, then pigs could fly. If it can't be, it isn't. But these are strange times. They say anything is possible. Yeah, I know that's true. But I'd check it out real close if I were you. I'd check it out real close if I were you. Mm-hmm. And then we think about the future. And I think about how we decide what we're going to do next. I want people to understand that we are caregivers to this planet. And if we can't see that, we're fooling ourselves. Here's a song about people that are fooling themselves. It's called One of the Lucky Ones. Survive, yes you have. Ooh, you're I'm still alive. Saying don't you worry about the chemicals that keep falling from the sky. Just drink the bottled water, wear a funny mask, it's a small price to pay. Gonna make the world a safer place so we can live the American way. Saying,
a couple more by Mike True. We are the lucky ones, and of course, who knows what the earlier one was. However, we have a caller from San Jose. It sounds like Dangerous John. Hey, Dangerous John.
Yeah, this is John joking. How's it going, Robert?
Not bad. What's up?
Can you hear me all right?
Oh, yeah.
That's good. I was having trouble with my reception earlier. Anyway, I just wanted to relate a little story that happened to me this past week in San Jose. To illustrate how difficult it is sometimes to help homeless people. I met this guy on the train. I guess his name was David. And he was having trouble getting off the street because even though he's on Social Security, apparently he moved from one town to another. And in his old town, he could just go down to the Social Security office and they would issue him a check on the spot. But in San Jose, apparently, they require that you have a mailing address so they can actually mail you a check to your address. So he was homeless because he couldn't get any money out of Social Security. So between one thing and another, I ended up trying to meet with him later to try to give him my home address to so he could send it to my address. But unfortunately, I didn't meet with him again because he didn't show up for his meeting, so, you know, that's just how it goes, I guess. But I tried to get him to sign up for my mailbox, but the mailbox wanted two forms of ID and all this kind of crap, so rather than have him sign up for the mailbox, I decided I would, you know, have him use my home address. But like I say, he never showed up for his second appointment, so, you know, I couldn't give him my address.
Yeah,
that didn't work out.
Well, it was nice. It was a nice gesture, John. I'm always wary of offering my, you know, my home address or anything like that. But I, you know, I admire people who have that kind of tenacity. The problem with that kind of stuff often is if you get burned once, then you kind of withdraw entirely because you feel like your trust has been betrayed. And you can get burned for a variety of reasons. You know, it might be somebody operating a scam. It might be somebody who simply is disabled. It might be somebody who changes their mind. Often people get into disagreements. That's the problem with the whole claim by groups like Take Back Santa Cruz and others who talk about, oh, well, if you're so concerned about these homeless people, why don't you just solve their problems yourself? Because it's like telling private charity in the 30s to solve the problems of elderly people before there was Social Security, you know, or to solve unemployment.
Yeah, and then as far as the church situation.
Before there was unemployment insurance. Go ahead, John.
As far as the church situation goes, the guy was offered the possibility of having a mail drop at a church, but in order to do that, he had to join the Catholic Church, and he was an atheist, a devout atheist, and he was totally against the idea of joining the Catholic Church so he could get a mail drop.
I don't think you need a mail. What he needed a mail drop in order to get what? What service?
To get your Social Security check. In San Jose, it's their policy that you have to have a mailing address in order to receive your check.
Well, I know definitely you don't need a mailing address in order to vote. I mean, we know that for sure.
Yeah.
That's changed. So,
yeah.
You know, there are social service agencies in Santa Cruz, of course, the agency is the Homeless Lack of Services Center, and that is one
yeah.
of the services it actually does provide, which is an address. And I imagine, you know, someplace like, I don't know, Scott Wager's church might be a place to go. The what they used to call this, the Community Homeless Alliance. They were
yeah.
active in taking over areas they occupied before Occupy was occupying, and a lot of us came over from Santa Cruz to support them to demand changes, demand housing for homeless people, demand an end to the criminalization of poor people. You might, if you meet other people in that situation or this person again, you might suggest to get in touch with the Community Homeless Alliance. And if you catch me off air,
yeah.
I might be able to give you some updated, you know, contact information for that group in San
right.
Jose.
And then as far as the Social Security checks go, I was just over there at the check cashing place and they had a sign in the window saying, alert, alert, the federal government will no longer be issuing checks for federal benefits as of March 2013. They'll be issuing debit cards instead, which I imagine carries fees and stuff to go along with them. So there's that situation coming down the pipe pretty soon.
Yeah, I think I read about that. That's attempt to put everything in plastic and electronics.
Yeah. So it'll be helpful for people who don't have a mailing address. At least they can actually get the card at the office instead of having to have it mailed to them. If they have that option, then it'll probably help solve this problem. But I imagine they probably don't have that option. So
well, it's not, I don't know how much,
they have a mailing address.
You don't know, I don't know.
Card.
I don't know how much money people are actually getting out of this anyway. I mean, apparently it's, you know, it's a pittance, and it's, although, you know, the amount of food stamp money, I was surprised to, food stamps, I was surprised to hear it increased fourfold under Bush. I guess there was so much unemployment, you know, if you want to keep the people pacified while you murder people in Iraq and Afghanistan, you better, you know, supply them with food at home, so.
Well, I'm currently getting, like, $1,700 a month out of Social Security, so it's not a pittance, but for people who don't have a mailing address, you know, they're homeless and maybe getting $500 a month, but they don't have enough to get a roof over their head, they will be out of an option if they don't get a debit card by March 2013. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I know most people have difficulty getting into, I guess you're on SSI, right? You're on Social Security Disability.
I'm on SSDI.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's difficult and if not impossible for most homeless people to get on. So it is a
pittance.
They get it. They get the GA pittance and the food stamp pittance if they can jump through the hoops of the county they're
right.
in. So,
yeah,
you know, and at the same time, they have to be dodging the police and paying the fines and doing the community service simply to be
right.
able to exist in public spaces at all. So,
yeah.
Well, I appreciate the update.
That's my story from here.
Yeah, sure. Any word?
I'm at San Leandro today. I'm putting up the wall of stolen lives. We're going to be filming it in James' backyard. I guess we don't have a more suitable place like a park to put it up in.
You should clarify, John, clarify for folks what that is. I don't think most people know what stolen lives
is. Well, it's a list of names, sort of like the list of names on the wall that, you know, for Vietnam vets, but in this case, it's a list of names on a wall for people who have been shot by the police. Either murdered or accidentally shot by the police, depending on your point of view.
Depending on your point of view or depending on what the facts are, I guess.
And as my mom said, I was just talking to her, she's kind of conservative in a lot of ways, but she said, yeah, sometimes the police act like they're God. You know, they're human, but they act like they're God sometimes. So she gets it, I think.
Well, if you give someone godlike powers, you shouldn't be surprised if they act like gods. You know, it's just how it goes.
Yeah.
Anything other with Food Not Bombs or any budding free radio stations over there in San Jose?
No, I haven't heard anything about that over in San Jose.
Oh, boy. Well, let's get busy. I want you to start a radio station.
So I occupy San Jose meeting on Wednesdays and Sundays.
And where do they
Wednesday
meet?
Wednesdays at 7, Sundays at noon.
Where do they meet?
At San Jose City Hall.
Okay, and do you go to those things?
Well, I just walked by there on Wednesday. I didn't stop and talk to them very much, but I was busy going somewhere else. But once in a while, I get them to endorse a protest that I'm doing or something. do that.
Is there more protesting than there was, let's say, a year ago at this time and before the Occupy started? I mean, I keep looking for...
Well, every Friday they have a bank protest now, although it's my understanding that it's not an official Occupy San Jose protest because they had a split or a schism within their organization that whoever was doing the Tumblr account publicized the Friday protest, and the General Assembly said, but wait a minute, it's not a San Jose protest. So they still have it every Friday in front of the banks downtown.
And what's the nature of this protest? What are they protesting?
They're protesting against the banking system, basically. I'm on the phone with Robert.
I mean, is this like, you know, down with the Federal Reserve, or is this, you know...
Well, I have to get good reception somewhere.
It looks like we may have to end the conversation. So there's banking protests, there's Occupy meetings, and the Stolen Lives thing is coming up. How can people get more information, John, from you about this stuff? You got an email that people can reach you at?
Well, I occasionally post stuff on my website, peacemovies.com. The latest thing I have up there is a pitch for donations for the Answer office in Los Angeles. We got their offices broken into a couple days ago because they were supporting the protests against the police shootings in Anaheim.
Huh, interesting. Do they know who broke into their offices?
Well, they were getting I don't know about death threats, but they were getting threatening phone calls before their offices got broken into related to the Anaheim protests. People who vehemently support the police down there.
Mm-hmm. If you decide to actually post regularly, I think, you know, it'd be useful for you to post on your own website the times of the Occupy meetings and the times of the bank protests and any other protests that are going on, unless there's another site where you suggest people can get that information. So if they're in San Jose, they can actually, you know, have some place to go and maybe even send you their notices to post. And I think that'd be a way of forming a kind of a...
Well, I have a limited amount of space in my homepage because I try not to have too long an introduction into my peace movies, but I generally try to give a little bit of a sermon before I get into the movie watching part of it.
Remember, on the streets may be more important than the movies, everybody has their own stuff they're doing. John. Appreciate the call. And anything else?
I think we got it covered.
Okay. Well, call again if you want. Thanks.
Okay.
That's Dangerous John over in San Jose, peacemovies.com. If you want to check out his website, he reviews violence in films. We talked about that last time a little bit. How I thought some real violence in films might be very educational, that you'd have to kind of get a doggy bag and go throw up after watching it. That might be helpful for you to understand what people are going through who are really on battlefields and killing other people they never met at the orders of people who are ripping them off at home. It's pretty ridiculous. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio 101.1. 3 was 101.1, but now it's 101.3 FM. And there's a stream, too. If you can get that by going to TuneIn on your browser. I know, you've got to look for TuneIn, and you'll find a particular website. And then put the FRSC letters in, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you should find us. I've been able to do that, at least, and maybe you can, too. Call-in number here is 427-3772. As usual, I'm having, even more trouble than usual with the studio's computer. So I'm going to try a rather risky thing. I'm going to try playing some of this Berkeley City Council via the microphone, which is going to be pretty tacky. But you might be able to hear the, what I think is an important bunch of testimony from folks in the audience. You can actually also go to the City of Berkeley website and download it directly. And I believe Santa Cruz has a similar downloading, which you can do. I know at least they stream. I got to double check. I'm supposed to have double checked by now, but I haven't. Maybe I'll do that in a bit. This is, again, discussion about the sitting ban ordinance that was not passed as a law, but put on the ballot as an initiative by opportunistic and right-wing politicians masquerading as progressives. Tom Bates, in this case, the mayor of Santa Cruz, is running the Berkeley City Council meeting. And everybody gets a minute to talk here, so that's the reason people are rushing up and down. But unlike the City Council of Santa Cruz, they do allow people to give their time to some. I also have a little problem with ads occasionally showing up, and that's annoying, but I have to deal with that. So forgive me for the blather coming on the air that you may hear coming on from the side. Now let's hear the Berkeley City Council. All right, hold on. We have to deal with a problem that has come up here, so don't go away.
More wars have been fought based on previous wars that have been fought over food or shelter or the desire to possess gold. War perpetuates itself and needs to end. The song is called War.
I think we've got our problem solved. That was Mike True doing a little pinch hitting from a distance. Let's see if I actually can get back to our much beloved Berkeley City Council. Here we go.
My name is Andrew Pritchett. I'm a Berkeley Cop Watch. And I'm here tonight because I want to address the issue of privilege, because I think that this entire proposal really stinks of privilege. It stinks not only of the privilege of never having of those who have not been homeless persecuting homeless people and creating legislation directed against a particular segment of our city, but the privilege of saying that you're going to use our precious city resources to put somebody into the court system. What is the cost of that trial? What is the cost of that law enforcement? And you're going to spread those costs out throughout Alameda County, right? That's that kind of selfish legislating that has destroyed our ability to really deal with homelessness. We'll take care of ours, not yours. Oh, so we can't offer real services. But I want to say this. I also think it's really, guess what? I'm going to take up for the police tonight. Because you can take good cops and have them enforce bad laws, and there's no way to look good doing it. The cost of the erosion of public confidence in the police that comes when a cop is told you're supposed to clear this sidewalk of people sitting here. How do you do that? Excuse me, sir. Ma'am, could you please get up or else I'm going to. You can keep a smile on your face the whole time as you put somebody's hand in cuffs and you take them down to the courthouse. Do you understand what I'm saying? Is that what we pay in the cost of eroded trust and the inability of law enforcement to really deal with crime and to really address people's fears? If you're scared of the police, if you've learned to hate them because they are unfair, and I teach kids, and the kids watch the police and they see what they do, and that's how the children learn to hate the police. Don't do this.
I'm a native Berkeleyan, and I also intern for the city council. I've come tonight to speak against the sit ordinance. I respectfully ask you to reject this law and end it tonight. We live in a time of economic hardship. People are really hurting, especially now. Why add to that pain? Why hurt those who have nothing? I remember when the recession was at its worst. My dad lost his job. And we were losing our house, consequently. The house that I've lived in throughout my whole life. Working on this ordinance made me wonder, what if we lost the house? What if we were homeless? How would I want to be treated? How would I have been treated? I grew up in Berkeley my whole life. I grew up in the culture of tolerance and respect. If we pass this ordinance, I will no longer be able to say that. Or at least in the past tense. Thank you.
And, again, that's Berkeley. I actually may have been able to get our computer working, albeit 10 minutes later. And let's see if we can actually play the more direct version, which may give us, hopefully, a better sound. But as you can hear, there's some pretty important and strong statements being made. If you have some thoughts about this, feel free to call in 427-3772, particularly if you have thoughts about our own local virtual sitting ban here in Santa Cruz. It's not a virtual sitting ban. It is a sitting ban on 95% of the sidewalks, and it essentially drives people to the curb, pretty much is what it does. So people can then interfere with folks getting out of their cars or smell the carbon monoxide. It's obviously, you might say, it's not very well thought out. Maybe it is thought out, and it's intended essentially to discourage people from hanging out, to discourage people from using public spaces so that the merchants can monopolize those spaces for their own commercial purposes. Not that their commercial purposes shouldn't be a part of the downtown. They certainly are, and they have a right to be there. But for them to monopolize them is wrong. And for them to subordinate human rights priorities to their commercial interests is obviously wrong and, you would think, unconstitutional. Since the Constitution, however, was made by merchants, it looks like we have to create a new Constitution or at least enforce the Constitution in a way that respects the rights of everyone in a way that's really never been done before.
Maureen, I'd like to cede my time to Ocean Newman, please.
My name is Ocean Newman. On June, when we were last here, there was a lot of talk about encampments, and that talk is also now in this resolution. It talks about encampments and the danger of encampments and how we have to get rid of encampments. And the only way to get rid of encampments is to pass a law against sitting, which criminalizes everybody who's sitting on the sidewalk. Let me tell you a little bit about an encampment, which was big back there in June. There's a group of young people who were, at that point, they were sitting around the library of Kittredge, and some of them are here now. And they were a big problem. They were dangerous. They, you know, all the stuff that people said about encampments. Well, they're not an encampment anymore. Right now, we don't have the sit law. They're not an encampment anymore. Well, what happened? Well, one thing that happened is that between May 17 and June 23, they were issued 25 citations. That is, 17 people were issued 25 citations. 16 of those were for trespassing. That is, for sleeping at night in doorways, in front of the library, off the sidewalk. But then two additional ones were for sleeping on the sidewalk. And one of them was for lying on the sidewalk, and that person was picked up in his sleeping bag, thrown onto the sidewalk in front of the kid, enraging them, and then his face was bashed against a police car. And now they're not, have no place to sleep. And they came to us, and they said, we have no place to sleep. And now you want to pass a law so that they have no place to sit. And so they have no place to sleep at night, and they can't sit during the day. That's what's going to happen. But right now, that encampment isn't happening anymore because they got those tickets plus some other tickets for crossing the street, jaywalking when they're like on the white line in front of them. If you want to get rid of these encampments, quote, you can do it and you've done it. You don't need this law. You don't have to make it a law that makes it illegal to sleep and be on the sidewalk at night and also illegal to be on sidewalk in the day. And then you say, I read now, right now, well, they can go into the park. Well, that's great. So then you have the parks as little homeless ghettos and see how well that goes over. And it won't go over that well.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Osha.
He has time. Please respect the speaker, Mr. Mayor.
It is profoundly sad that we are going this route. Profoundly sad.
That interchange you hear between the two council members, the one who tried to stop him was the mayor. The one who tried to said respect the speaker, who was Osha Newman, the head of the Berkeley, what was called the Sidewalk Clinic, and now has a new name. It attempts to protect the legal rights of homeless people. Is a guy called Chris Worthington, who is now running for mayor against Tom Bates up in Berkeley. Worthington has a district that covers the Telegraph Avenue area, or did. I'm sure they may have changed the districting. But he is one of three council members who, subsequent to this meeting, because it was cut short, had a press conference and may be filing a lawsuit against the city council for essentially violating the Brown Act, which requires the public be allowed to speak at meetings, that the city council members be allowed to respond. The mayor apparently did some funny business at the end of the meeting, which I'm curious to see, and that should be coming up down the road. This, again, is the Berkeley City Council meeting of July 10th, I believe.
that we are going. Am I out of time?
No.
No, you're okay. You're okay.
Okay. You know what?
You're okay, okay.
Let me read you. Not from, some homeless advocates here, some, you know, hippie advocates. And what I'm going to read you is in quote, criminalization policies further marginalize men and women who are experiencing homelessness, fuel inflammatory attitudes, and may even unduly restrict constitutionally protected liberties. Moreover, there is ample evidence that alternatives to criminalization policies can adequately balance the needs for all parties. Who was that? That was not the hippies in this room, not the homeless fighters. This was the Federal Interagency Council on Homelessness. This was the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Commerce, Defense, Education, Energy, Health and Human Services, Homeland Security, Housing and Urban Affairs, etc. That was their position. And that was not only the position that they took. Then last month, the National Conference of Mayors passed a resolution supporting that position, saying that we urge the recommendation of the adoption. Mayor Bates, we're part of that. Why is Berkeley going this way? Why? And we can turn this to jubilation if we go for Jesse Arener's proposal. Then all of this anger, all of this horror at what you're doing could be turned to joy and jubilation and kumbaya. Yes, you're right. And let's do it. Thank you.
And Jesse Aaron has an alternative proposal that was ignored and rejected by Mayor Tom Bates and the council majority, which I'll describe in a bit once I've drawn it up. More now from the Berkeley City Council. I should say from the public addressing the Berkeley City Council about 11:30 at night, I believe. Pretty late in the evening anyway.
Oh. All right, I apologize for the lack of concision and clarity. When the radio is exposed to mass numbers of people rooted in the food-eating paradigm, it has auditory pop hallucinations, basically, like right now I'm listening to. There, how can I forget you when there's always something there to remind me? Sugar water. Homelessness is miserable on Shattuck Avenue, because it's a formal pun, Shattuck. So Telegraph is distant writing. If you move them over to Telegraph and force them to write and give them caloric beverages so they didn't have to defecate in public. It's a generalized heat addiction. Berkeley isn't even cold. Almost everyone in this room could wander around in a bathing suit at 2 a.m. You could go over to San Francisco where it's, still pleasant but appreciably colder, and then come back here and realize, why do we hide in these structures all the time? The weather system in Berkeley is basically, it's perfect. There may not be a better weather system on this planet. Get outside.
I yield my time to Patricia Wall.
Good evening, council members. I've seen way too much of all of you lately, and I think that we all like it much better when we see much less of each other. So I'll make a deal with you. I'll stay away if you guys back up. Just back up. This is rushed in a way that it doesn't need to be. So we're going to do a little call and response now, because I love it. All right. So I'm going to say something, and then you guys are going to say, back up, back off. All right? Let's practice. All right.
Back up.
Back off. Oh, that's not on. We're really angry.
Back up, back off.
Awesome. The U.S. Interagency Council, the U.S. Conference of Mayors, ACLU, four City of Berkeley commissions, every service provider for homeless people in Berkeley, 50 small businesses, 50 progressive organizations in the Bay Area, all say you're wrong. Tom Bates had apparent secret meetings with Roland and John and Mr. Becker, and when we asked you about it last year, you lied. We're ashamed of you. You pushed this half-baked measure to council when you knew you had the votes, as if that's great justification for taking something to council. Not because you studied the effects of the proposal, but because you were lobbied by moneyed interest. That is so sleazy.
Back up, back up.
We don't want this law. We want you to vote no tonight.
I yield my time.
Okay. We all know I'm Ninja Kitty. I'm here to speak on the SIT bylaw, but I want to bring up a few other issues that are closely related to it. Now, I look at the history with the police on homeless people, how they handled the crimes. Now, you see, my friend was brutally woken up out of his sleeping bag the other day for sleeping in a quote-unquote city park that is not a city park in any way. It's actually not even owned property. It's public land that I have found. Now, you see, the thing is he was told he was resisting arrest because he was asleep. And they dragged him out and beat him for 5 minutes. Held him behind spotlights so I could not videotape them doing this. And this is being promoted by you because you don't want us here. The problem is, the harder you push us, the more we will come. We are a family. We have nothing but each other. You cannot drive us apart from each other. You cannot destroy us. We are American citizens. And what you forget to overlook is I am registered to vote. My opinion does count. It does matter. And I will do everything in my power to get every homeless person registered to vote to bring you down. My country, welcome to it.
My name is Carolyn Scar, and I'm a 68-year-old housewife, and I shop in Berkeley regularly, and I've never been impeded by one single person, no matter where they sat or lay. And I think that if we really want to help the businesses in this community, we should institute the commercial rent control law, which we started on. That's one of the big destructions of business in this state, in this city. The other thing we need is free parking. I don't expect to see free parking, but we could at least have validated parking. We used to have validated parking. Maybe the big businesses don't want to pay for validated parking, although it would be a reasonable cost of business. I can park on at the streets because I've got a blue tag, but most people don't have a blue tag, and even if you do have a blue tag, parking places are hard to find. So in the parking lots, you could have short-term, 1 hour, say, free parking. That would really help the businesses. If you really want to help the businesses, there's ways to do it that don't have to violate the civil rights of our homeless people.
And that's interesting. You're listening to the Berkeley City Council from 2 weeks ago. This is the kind of suggestion that actually goes to issues of helping businesses in real ways that might lure people into Santa Cruz. For instance, Santa Cruz is rapidly losing all its free parking. I mean, you know, the previous 3-hour parking lots are now paid parking lots. There are huge fines if you hang, you know, if you get beyond the limit in the parking areas. There's no real validated parking, or very little, in Santa Cruz that I've heard of. And the commercial rents are huge. I was talking to one owner whose rent was 10 or 15 times in terms because of parking space allotments. It's almost like a racket being run by the city as a way of financing its other projects, the city government run by Martine Bernal, the city manager and the city staff. And it's never examined, it's never discussed, it's never the subject even of these city council elections. It won't be brought up, I imagine. They'll be talking about the homeless menace, or, you know, maybe DSAL, although that's supposedly one of those neutral issues on the ballot, but of course it's not neutral. It is an issue that people who put it on the ballot wanted to defeat, and it'd be nice if they were more candid about it. I tend to agree with them, but, you know, I like to see honesty in advertising. In any case, there are real proposals for addressing business problems, but that large corporate business interests don't want to allow, or perhaps it's, you know, the large landlords down there, the commercial landlords. I don't know. I'm speculating, but I find this kind of suggestion interesting and makes me realize that however much I've heard from Berkeley expatriates that Berkeley has become a useless bourgeois community. There are still elements there that do speak up at these meetings, that do have things to say that are relevant in mass numbers that don't even think of appearing in Santa Cruz shitty council meetings, as I call them. In the last city council meeting, I didn't go to it, but I saw it on the computer, and you know, there was a bunch of people at Oral Communications talking about, actually it was at the D-Cell. There was one guy came to Oral Communications, which has been placed in the ghetto by Mayor Don Lane at 5 o'clock, or around 5 o'clock. You can never be sure exactly where it's going to be, but it's somewhere in there. And, of course, that discourages people from coming. It's ridiculous. But it is, of course, part of the plan to marginalize regular speakers at Oral Communications who raise issues like I used to raise, that the mayor and the city council simply do not want to listen to. More important, they don't want the community to hear about them, and they don't want to be embarrassed about them. So they've engaged in a whole series of repressive procedures, which are really disgraceful to people who like to consider themselves liberals or even following, you know, the laws and, well, the Brown Act concerns that are supposed to be providing for a certain window for the community. Now they've adopted stuff that simply essentially is designed to cut off particular forms of disfavored speech in Santa Cruz. In Berkeley, you're going to see the same thing happening, but at least there's a pushback, which, however futile, you know, however ineffective, however unsuccessful, is still encouraging to see, because it gives perhaps a sense of what might come in the future. More from the Berkeley City Council meeting on the issue of the sitting ban initiative, which Mayor Bates wanted and actually was successful in getting on the November ballot.
Good evening. My name is Chris Douglas, and I'm a civil rights attorney. And I had the pleasure 4 months ago starting to work in this community, coming from a very conservative place. And I thought that I had come to the promised land of tolerance and, you know, liberalism, only to learn that my clients aren't just being cited; they're being harassed. They're definitely being profiled. This isn't the Berkeley that I thought I was coming to work at. I thought my job was going to be easy, and instead, I have to work super hard to make sure that the cops aren't abusing my clients, aren't abusing their discretion, and that people don't go to jail and don't get citations for things that they didn't do wrong. Thank you.
I'm Elisa Della Piana. I work at the East Bay Community Law Center. And I have reports here. I have all kinds of exciting things. Proof that the studies that show that the other sit lie laws in other places have not worked. LA, San Francisco, the National Coalition on Homelessness report about cities across the country. It doesn't decrease homelessness. It doesn't stop people from being in public spaces. It doesn't stop them from being on the street. But honestly, this stuff doesn't matter as much as the conversation that I had with my 5-year-old about this law and where I was going tonight. Because I told him that it was going to be, if this got put on the ballot, the city council was saying, we approve of a law. We approve of a law. We want the voters to pass a law that says it's not okay to sit on the sidewalk. And he was terrified because he sits on the sidewalk all the time. And then I had to explain to him that he won't be cited for it because he is not who this law is targeted at. And I had to tell him that it was because people are homeless who don't have anywhere to go, that those people will be cited for sitting on the sidewalk. And he was horrified because he knows at 5 years old that it's not fair to target homeless people who don't have anywhere else to go and make them criminals for sitting.
Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Ana Reyes. I'm an intern for the City Council, and I'm also a UC Berkeley student and a Berkeley resident. I just wanted to speak against the ordinance and hope that you do not vote for it. This ordinance is basically, small compromises that we make on the basic human rights of others are the most dangerous because it creates a culture of compromise. It sets a dangerous precedent, a slippery precedent, of turning the other cheek when faced with responsibility. Responsibility that you all ran for, that you all campaigned for, okay? So it's like you're wasting your time coming here, passing ordinances like this that criminalize people who don't have resources. Beyond being economically backwards or even totally immoral, this ordinance is irresponsible. It is irresponsible to make such big decisions about people that you haven't even taken the time to love. Okay? So please vote against this. Have a good night.
Good evening. My name is Deborah Garcia. I've been living in Berkeley for 17 years, and this is the first time I've ever addressed the council. This is the first issue that has really burned me up so much that I felt a need to come here. And let me just say that I do buy locally. I believe in supporting local businesses. But 6 or 7 weeks, I only found out about this thing about 6 or 7 weeks ago, this no-sit ordinance. And I was just absolutely shocked that Berkeley was even considering this. I grew up in L.A. It was sort of like my goal to be in Berkeley. This is where I wanted to be because of what it used to stand for. So I think that just the idea of criminalizing, and it is criminalizing homelessness, it's criminalizing sitting. I can't believe that Berkeley is proposing this. And I'm also thinking that it's not going to solve anything. I mean, we were having like an economic crisis. This isn't going to solve it. And as a matter of fact, I think it's going to create more problems for local businesses, because if I know of any business that is supporting this ridiculous ordinance, I will be boycotting them. So please don't support this ordinance.
I usually come to you speaking on behalf of WeBake, but I'm not. I'm speaking strictly in a personal capacity here. And I usually come and I speak to you about a lot of facts and figures about business in West Berkeley and zoning and all these kinds of things. But I'm not going to speak about that here. This is being portrayed as an economic issue. I don't believe it's an economic issue. This is a soul issue. I've had some interaction with a bunch of you over the last few years. Gordon has never returned my calls. Jesse, Chris, and Max, I trust their instincts on this. Tom seems to be pushing it. I'm speaking specifically to Lori, who I've spent a lot of time with over the last couple of years, and Linda, who I've known for quite a while, and Daryl, who I've spent some time with. I know the three of you, and I think the three of you know in your gut and in your heart that this is wrong. Daryl, I think you've probably experienced discrimination in your life on a number of levels. I think you can touch that, and you can see that when the most vulnerable of us are being targeted in a city of great wealth and great disparity, thanks, something is wrong about that.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you.
My name is Zachary Running Wolf, and I'm a candidate for mayor, and there's obvious reasons why we need new leadership in this town. I grew up here in the city of Berkeley since 1967, and it's immensely changed. Not welcoming people of color, economic downtrodden. I'd like to wake you up to Tavis Smiley and Cornel West are going around the country advertising that basically one in two Americans are living below the poverty line. So for this to come down, not only like, wow, I mean, in an indigenous perspective, if when we met the boat, we said, you don't have the right to sit. And now you've done this? I mean, this is just appalling. Really. You're a guest in my people's land. You should start acting like it. Oh.
Alejandro Soto Vigil. I worked for Councilmember Worthington for the last 3.5 years, and I've sat in a lot of meetings and listened to you speak, so please listen to me speak tonight. The people have spoken. The facts have spoken. The past lawsuits have spoken. The alternatives have spoken. The morals have spoken. The lies have been broken. If you place this on the ballot, I will be extremely disappointed in you. I will look at you very different. And I will feel that the property owners have eaten your souls and you have no morals.
Oh.
And it looks like Keith Worthington, or Chris Worthington, the council member, has walked away from his seat and joined the audience and singing with them. They've all stood up and continued singing this, "We Shall Not Be Moved."
So we're gonna take a recess. We're gonna recess. First of all, we're going to extend. I move that we extend till 12:30. Everybody, Matt Mayo, call the roll.
Councilmember Mayo for the extension. Councilmember Moore. Councilmember Anderson.
Anderson, you voting?
Councilmember Aragon to extend. 12:30. Councilmember Capitelli. Councilmember Wengraff is absent. Councilmember Worthington. Councilmember Wozniak. Mayor Bates. Motion passes.
And there are about, I'm counting, looking at the TV picture here of the Berkeley City Council, I'm counting 50 people maybe in the room.
Thank you. That's enough, please. We have. Thank you. We'd like to proceed.
Mayor Bates.
That's enough, please. We don't. You want to?
We shall not be moved. We shall not be moved. We are standing by the waters. We shall not be moved. We shall not be moved.
It sounds like a less melodic voice taking over the main mic, but the singing is continuing in spite of Mayor Bates' refusal to, or his determination to shut down the protest. People continue to stand, clap, and sing.
We shall not be moved. We're standing by the water.
We need somebody, however, who's got, a little more perfect pitch, perhaps.
We shall not be moved. Fighting for our freedom, we shall not be moved. We're standing by the water.
And the point here is that City Council is going to be ramming through a initiative that will cost the taxpayers, $26,000 to put on the ballot. That is fundamentally a law to deny the civil rights to homeless people in Berkeley. At the behest of a special interest group, the merchants. And while it has a majority on the Berkeley City Council, and probably at the Santa Cruz City Council too, for that matter, if it were down here, it actually already does. We have an even worse law down here. The council is still in session, and the video is still, the official Berkeley City video is going on. It's interesting that when protests happen in Santa Cruz, the camera crews of community TV turn off their cameras. This was the case after the Nazi salute. And actually, there are council members who are actually sitting at the dais who are clapping their hands and singing, not just Chris Worthington, who walked into the audience, is still standing there, council member Chris Worthington, and clapping his hands and singing in Berkeley. Others, however, actually there are two African-American council members on the council who are singing. I guess that's what you're hearing, the rather bad singing, I got to say, of the council member. But nonetheless, it's not the quality of the singing; it's the fact that counts. And in a way, this is kind of interesting compared to the Santa Cruz City Council meeting. When there was a similar demonstration back in 1996, Council Mayor Mike Rotkin had a David Silva, who was not singing or anything, but trying to present petitions to the council. Well, he sat by while Sergeant Andy Crane threw Silva into a pillar, which essentially crippled him for his campaign. He won a subsequent lawsuit against Sergeant Crane. Other people were arrested and tried for disrupting a council meeting. They were all found, at least, they were either found not guilty or they pled to something. But there was very quick action by Mayor Rotkin, and as there is at Santa Cruz, to stop any kind of protest like this, which, as you can see in Berkeley, they don't try to stop, probably because they have something else in mind, the people who are running this meeting and who are determined to pass their agenda. And it's continuing, this meeting. I mean, this thing, I slowed down. Now there seems to be, it looks like the audio has been cut off, and you can still see people clapping and probably singing, but, and there's, yeah, there's, it says on the screen, no audio, so there's no more audio. But again, this is what democracy is. It's a large, you know, it's a public response. Admittedly, it's, now this is what, this is a real disruption of the meeting, but it's, of course, and I am, of course, against the sitting ban and in favor of the opinions of the people who are applauding. But you aren't seeing any force and violence. But this measure would create force and violence and allow the police, it would enable the police to create more brutality. You've already heard from Osha Newman, the attorney from the Sidewalk Clinic, about the abuses that he has heard from about homeless people. And I've heard similar stories here in Santa Cruz. Though generally less violent, though not always. There have been several stories. One man's claim that his arm has been broken, and of course, there is the case of there are some really verified cases of people who have been brutalized by police with no response. There being no response from authorities, no oversight, no control. Case, for example, of Donna Dice several years ago, an elderly woman in her van who had her arm broken by Sergeant Lamas. And again, I'm looking at this. You can't see it, but I can, and you can too if you go to the City of Berkeley's website and download the July 10th council meeting. The clapping is continuing. People are becoming more enthusiastic with each other. They're sort of spreading out. They're standing up. They're holding up signs. This is the kind of spontaneous eruption that, I mean, I'm assuming it's spontaneous. It could have been planned. There's a character with a video camera who's coming around and taking photos. A woman who's one of those hefty video cameras you put on your shoulder. And it's, boy, I wish you could see this, folks. Of course, you can't. Now, what I'm doing is I am really waiting for the sound to return, but it isn't returning. And I guess what I'm going to do while we're waiting for this is I'm going to read to you a little something about a subsequent news report about what went down around this time. Here is what happened the next day on July 11th. There was a press conference held by three of the council members, Jesse Arguin, and I guess Chris Worthington wasn't specifically there, but he was probably supportive. Buna Chima, the head of Berkeley Outreach Support Services, which now has another name, Max Anderson, Osha Newman, Jenny Castillo. And the press release said this: after 60 residents spoke and sang in opposition, Mayor Tom Bates forced a vote on the anti-sitting ordinance without debate from council. At the press conference, members of the public and city council will say what they would have said if the mayor had not stopped them from speaking. And there's a quote from Jenny Castillo, it's not Jimmy: as a homeless mother with three small kids, our survival required us to sit on sidewalks to perform and ask for money. To make sitting illegal is unnecessary and undermines our civil liberties and rights to survival. And I'm still waiting for the audio to resume. It looks like the mayor is returning to his seat now. So there may be some of that coming back on shortly. Another quote is from Alejandra Alas, Berkeley student. This ordinance will have devastating effects on day laborers. They depend on sitting in commercial districts to earn their livelihood, and this measure would criminalize that behavior and lead to deportation. Osha Newman writes, from its beginning to backroom deals to last night's travesty of a vote of questionable legality, Mayor Bates and the proponents of this ban on sitting conspire to do everything possible to prevent public input and democratic discussion. They know the level of outrage their proposal is generating. Now I think they've gone too far. I think they cooked their own goose. That would be nice. He's probably wrong, though. Bunachima, Building Opportunities for Self-Sufficiency, or BOSS, which was previously called Berkeley Outreach Support Services, same acronym, same organization, the different name now. It is critical to hear the voices of the youth who have been showing up in large numbers at city council meetings only to be told there is no room in the council chambers. If the youth get to this podium, they are often told to keep their comments short. Here comes the vote by Bates.
Oh, that's okay.
So I'm moving the recommendation. Since you don't want to listen, we're gonna move the recommendation and the one I have before you. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by
second
Wozniak.
So, well, I know I want
more.
To speak about
speak?
Why it is I feel
speak?
That this is important for me.
Okay, Councilmember Aragon, do you want to speak?
I want to speak.
You were on the queue.
Yes.
Councilmember Mayo.
He shall overcome.
I wanted to explain why I felt it was important.
Oh, deep in my heart.
And while Councilmember Mayo, who seems like a relatively soft-voiced woman here, tries to explain why she supports the sitting ban initiative, I think another council member is singing loudly into the mic, "We shall overcome." There seems to be a real divergence is the word, of opinion. And the opinion is being echoed in action.
Lord, I do believe.
Oh, no.
And again, the
audio
is going on and off.
On the floor in a second. I call the roll on the motion.
Mayor Bates, we have speakers on the speakers list.
And you're hearing Councilmember Worthington interrupt Mayor, the vote that Mayor Bates is trying to hold by, in essence, saying, we have not had a chance to speak. We, the council members who oppose or support this, have not been able to speak. It has to be said, of course, it's kind of hard to hear the council members speaking over the singing, but I think Worthington is right. They have a right to speak just as the public has a right to speak. If the mayor wants to proceed, he has to allow that to happen. If it's being drowned out by the audience, his alternative is to recess the meeting and resume it another time, or he could presumably ask the audience to pipe down, and if they don't pipe down, remove those who aren't, or in essence disrupting the meeting. It's fair to remove people who are disrupting a meeting, if that is, well, it's fair. It may not be a good idea in the sense of the broader realities of what's going on here, but that is something that really, you can't really question in terms of the policies of the meeting. But he does neither of those things. Instead, he proceeds to call for a vote before council members have had a chance to speak. And in so doing, he violates, so the council members claim, the Brown Act. And that was the statement I was in the midst of reading while we were waiting for this final section to come up.
You were singing.
I was on the speaker's list.
Yes.
I was on the speaker's list.
We don't allow the democracy to work, so we're going to vote without you.
And that was Chris Worthington, the councilman, saying I was on the speaker's list. And I think Tom Bates, the mayor, who's calling for the vote, and another council member who's supporting him, who I don't recognize and don't know which one he is supporting the mayor, saying this is democracy, you were singing, so you can't vote. Instead, Worthington says, no, I was on the speaker's list, and the vote continues.
Yes. Councilmember Moore.
Point of order. This motion is out of order. The speakers have not been allowed to speak.
Staff recommendation. Speakers put the measure on
there
the
ballot. There has been no discussion.
No.
We cannot deny the council members a chance to have our vote say. This motion is out of order. Mayor Bates, please follow our rules and let the discussion. There has been no discussion of this motion. Please follow.
Allow us to have a democracy. You won't allow us to have a free speech. You won't allow us to say anything. You're disrupting the meeting. If you all sit down, we'll have an opportunity to debate this. But if you don't want to sit down and you're disloyal, you're making all this ruckus, we're just going to pass it. So, how did Wingraff vote? Did Wingraff vote?
Remember Wingraff?
This motion is out of order. You cannot. There are speakers on the speakers list. You need to let the speakers speak.
Yes.
This motion is trying to be ran. The motion did not pass. The motion is not in order.
And we need an author.
There are speakers on the speakers list.
We have a motion to adjourn.
There are speakers on the.
And the mayor has passed the motion in spite of the fact that not all the council members have been allowed to speak. I think, and then he calls, makes a motion to adjourn. It's 2 weeks later, and I haven't heard anything from Berkeley that indicates there's been any, I think, any successful attack on this procedure by Mayor Bates. There was a press conference the next day, and I'm going to follow that a little bit. But here's the conclusion of the meeting.
Speaker's list.
Democracy! Democracy now! Is that right? Well, these people won't even shut down until we can have them.
Who's the seconder? Wozniak? On the motion to adjourn?
The motion is not in order because we have not had...
Councilmember Moore?
This will not stand.
Councilmember Anderson?
Not a word of discussion of this motion. Not one single word in favor or opposed was allowed. This motion is out of order.
The one who disrupted the whole thing. You disrupted the whole thing.
You are, Mayor Bates, you are the one that is disrupting the city of Berkeley and running the risk of making all of our ballot measures lose. This motion is not in order.
Mayor Bates,
please show respect for the public.
And the meeting was adjourned. So, I've been trying to follow this, and one place to follow it is at the Berkeley Daily Planet, which is a very useful website that I go to. It's an alternative newspaper up in Berkeley, and I'm taking a look to see if there's been anything new on this. I don't think there's some discussion of Tom Bates and the secret government of Berkeley. There's open letter to Bart about civil rights and civil liberties. 10 things a mayor could do in the city of Berkeley. Chris Worthington is now running for mayor. That could have been one response to the failure of the city. I think the city attorney ruled that everything was fine with this. Let's see if I can find anything else about it. It doesn't look like there was much discussion. And I don't see... There is a Stand Up for the Right to Sit Down coalition, and there is a listing of a whole bunch of merchants who support the right to sit down. And a bunch of organizations. The merchants include Alliance Graphics, ACCA Office Supply, Anaher Grocery, Art House Gallery, a whole bunch of things. The ones I recognize are the Ashkenaz, the Cafe Valparaiso, Free Radio Berkeley, East Bay Media Center, La Peña, Rasputin Records, Revolution Books, Starry Plow, council members Worthington, Arung, and Anderson, and the variety of organizations also supports the right to sit down. ACLU of Northern California, Street Spirit Newspaper, Student ASUC Organization, Berkeley Daily Planet, Gray Panthers, Food and Housing Project, National Lawyers Guild, Quakers, Cop Watch, Neighborhood Association of Directors, Community Law Center, Center for Human Rights, Civil Liberties Institute, National Lawyers Guild. It's two chapters of it. The Peace and Justice Commission, and that's a body that the City Council created, which we should have in Santa Cruz as well. Western Regional Advocacy Project, and a number of other groups as well. I'm actually going to send this list of organizations to Attorney Ed Fry, who is also facing a go-to-jail demand on August 8th, I believe it is. And these might be helpful for him. He's looking for friend of the court, amicus briefs, because he wants to appeal his conviction. He was convicted of sitting down, actually lying down in front of the county, the courthouse at night, in a protest that didn't obstruct anybody, but that the authorities wanted to eliminate. And he's facing 6 months in jail for that. And I hope, I hope there's a way around that. But he's already served 2 weeks in jail, and at which point he got out on, he'd been placed there on $50,000 bail by Judge Gallagher. And that then sort of was a situation where he launched into appeals after that, and the appeals failed. Now he's going to try a different kind of appeal, and he'll require different legal support, friend of the court briefs from different organizations, and maybe some of these will provide some help if he or others contact them. Again, I don't see that anything further was really done. Let's see if I can find something else here, which nope. So what you have in response in Berkeley is Chris Worthington running for mayor in opposition to Tom Bates, which is an interesting exchange, because Worthington was the only council member who actually got up in this meeting, joined the audience, began singing with them, and then, of course, loudly challenged this procedure that Bates, the mayor, used to pass the measure over anger of the citizens, over the singing of the citizens. And, you know, he could have allowed the city council to, you know, make their comments into the microphone, which might not have been heard by the people in the audience, but would have been heard by anybody listening to the tape, and would have allowed them to have their, to speak their piece, but he didn't do that. He, I think, temperamentally, impulsively, and inappropriately cut things short. But whether that's going to actually result in this measure being ruled unconstitutionally placed on the ballot, they would have to redo the meeting. It's really rare that where I've heard of any, either Berkeley or Santa Cruz, redoing their council meetings. I've often made complaints, Brown Act complaints, that I think are legitimate. They've been ignored, and I think that you have to really activate and effectuate those complaints. When they're turned down, you have to take them to court, which requires money and time. Now, in Berkeley, there are enough people up there to do that if they want. But I'm not aware they've done it. And if they had done it, if they were going to do it, it presumably would have been done shortly after the council meeting. And it's, you know, they had another council meeting since. So we'll see. I guess the real response has been Worthington's running for mayor, and maybe a boycott of businesses that are supporting the measure, though it looks like a hell of a lot of businesses are at least not opposing the measure. We did a similar call for a boycott of businesses first in 1994 the sitting ban in Santa Cruz first passed, and we were the first city in the state to actually pass this ban. Berkeley had it up for discussion, but it was postponed. Actually, they passed it, and the voters shoved it off into an initiative, I believe, is what happened. I may have that slightly wrong, but I think we were the first. I should say they were the first. The people on the city council, Scott Kennedy, Mike Rodkin, Cynthia Matthews, all the pretend progressives who are actually engaged in, you know, deals with their other hands with the merchants downtown and fronting for their agenda, at least in part. There was a boycott of a number of businesses. I still don't purchase at Atlantis Fantasy World. I don't purchase at Game-A-Lot, even though I know the owners of both stores and I'm friendly with them. Joe of Atlantis and Frank of Game-A-Lot. And I like them personally, and I was purchasing from them before. I just, you know, but not anymore because they were supporters of this anti-homeless law, and they still are. I said, anytime you want to abandon your support, I would love to resume purchasing at your stores. Other stores were the ID building, which no longer exists. It used to be across from the Bookshop Santa Cruz. The Bookshop Santa Cruz itself, of course, which I now call the Bookshop Coonerty. Then council member Neil Coonerty, Ryan Coonerty's father, who's now the supervisor, Neil Coonerty is, was the big backer for this measure, the phony baloney progressive who essentially went right, although he, you know, he's nationally very progressive, as many of these Democratic Party politicians are. I don't even know if he is a Democratic Party politician, but I'm not aware that he supported any of the other parties. But I'm not aware that he's a big supporter of the Democratic Party either. But he certainly is a big supporter of anti-homeless laws, the sleeping ban, laws that created all kinds of special privatizations of the sidewalk in front of his business. He made it illegal to set up tables in front of his business, at least in front of Chocolat, where we had a table before. I'm still in the process of considering and kind of getting ready a challenge to his bathroom exclusionary policies. For many years, the Bookshop Santa Cruz had a bathroom that was open to the community. And I always commended Coonerty for this, even after his disagreement with me. And he excluded me from his store because of our protests against the anti-homeless laws that his family and he supported. Specifically, he did, and probably a couple of other members of his family. But the bookshop, you would hear people in the bookshop say, "We don't support this." People in the management section, and I said, "Well, good. Put up a sign that says we don't support these anti-homeless laws that will arrest homeless people for sitting on the sidewalk." But they never did. So. He banned us, the activists who were involved. He, in the course of the whole debate, somebody threw a rock through his window. He blamed me for it, even though I had nothing to do with it and actually condemned the action. I don't think that kind of vandalism is generally helpful. And I haven't been in the Bookshop Santa Cruz in, 20 years now. When the Board of Supervisors began holding their weekly meeting, one of their weekly meeting orientation sessions there, one of the supervisors, each supervisor often has a meeting with their constituents. And when Marty Wormhout, who's now dead and was a supervisor, I guess, in the late 90s and early years of the 21st century, she began holding meetings there. I demanded that it be opened up to the public, and she moved them elsewhere, and that was fine. She wants to do that. Now we have a situation where the city is paying for three visitors' bathrooms in the city of Santa Cruz. One's at the, I don't know the name of the place. What was the tea house, right down the road, right between the Farmer's Market and New Leaf Market, if you know that street. I think it's Lincoln, and there's a visitor's bathroom, which means anybody can go in there and use the bathroom. You don't have to be a customer. You just have to be a visitor. Similarly, there's such a bathroom in Pizza My Heart. If times haven't changed, you'll see a little visitor's bathroom sign out front. And there is also one in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz. And I think Becky Johnson went in there and used it. even though she's been banned from the bookshop Santa Cruz, again, as part of the protests. She was actually banned more recently. She was banned in 2007 when Ryan Coonerty, the son of Neil Coonerty, now a former mayor still on the city council, sort of the leader of the anti-homeless brigade on the council, was supporting the sleeping ban, and we were having protests in front of his store, tabling, having musical events, and we had a Know Your Rights training there, and then we had a march to City Hall where there was a week-long Homeless for the Homies sleepout. He banned a number of activists, including Bernard Klitzner and Becky Johnson, and again myself, but I'd already been banned. I can't be banned twice when the ban is still in effect. But Becky walked into the bathroom and there was no problem. So they may have changed their policy, but my problem is I'm the kind of person that is a little wary of these situations, particularly since I'm under an OR condition, meaning as most listeners know, I'm facing charges that were cooked up. Oops, sounds like I'm getting a problem again from the my computer, which actually, perhaps I should, I actually should play this because it's a very interesting situation, but what I'm hoping to stop this from happening so I can actually talk without being drowned out, and I guess... what we're going to do is shut it down. Sorry about that, folks. So it's important. If you've experienced any problems using the visitors' bathrooms in any of these three places, Bookshop Coonerty, Pizza My Heart, or I guess it's formerly a tea room. It's several stores down from the Indian restaurant on the corner of Pacific and Lincoln toward the... Farmers Market area on Wednesday, the area that's used as the Farmers Market, that large parking lot across from the Red Church. Please let me know. And you can either call into the show when I'm on the air, which is every Sunday from 9:30 to 1, and every Thursday night from 6 to 8, or you can give me a call at home on the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I think at some point I and others will need to maybe soon walk into that bathroom to make sure it's usable for people who are disliked by Ryan Coonerty and Neil Coonerty, but that are members of the public and don't need to be discriminated against. And it may be no problem at all. I guess if Ryan is smart, he'll simply let sleeping dogs lie. But sometimes these people get on their high horse and think they own the town. In fact, that happens more and more, and particularly when it happens in their own store. But if you've agreed to let the public come into your bathrooms, it's important to fulfill that commitment since you're being paid to do that. This was actually a program that I supported in Santa Barbara 20 years ago when I was an activist down there. And it may have been imported from Santa Barbara, or it may just be coincidental that it's being done up here as well. Because there really is a public restroom problem in Santa Cruz, particularly at night. I guess if you're an attender of the bars, you can, you know, use the bathrooms there at least until they close. But for everybody else, and also past the closing time, there's no legal place to take a piss or take a dump. It just, there is not. They close this stuff down as though it's, you know, somehow, you know, evil roams after dark. And so, since I'm always being interrupted by this story that is being played on, it's actually about a Stockton city manager who tried to stop an Occupy Stockton activist from chalking on the sidewalk a political message and then shoved her by her account or bumped her by his account. And it actually got on the news. Mostly it's a sort of an unsympathetic pro-city manager kind of account, but I'm going to play it anyway. It's interesting. In Santa Cruz, we had the same situation with Becky Johnson, and I'll talk about that in a moment, which you can actually read about if you're a Counterpunch a reader. Counterpunch is a website I often go to, a lefty website. I think it was founded by the recently dead Alex Coburn. who died in the last week or so. Hats off to Alex for all his writing and all his work. I've read many of his items. He doesn't always agree with even conventional lefties, but it was always stimulating and interesting to read. Anyway, Stockton, Chalking, I'm going to sort of play this video, and we're going to use the old-fashioned approach rather than try to actually get the studio to cooperate. Let's see if we can do this. I'm working on it here. Don't go away. We get a sponsor message first, and then we're going to hear the actual news story. So forgive me for the theatrical effects. I'm not even going to bother to talk about this commercial. So here we go.
San Joaquin County District Attorney's Office says it plans to investigate a bizarre incident between an Occupy protester and Stockton's city manager.
Did city manager Bob Dykes allegedly shove a protester today in front of City Hall? News 10's Cornell Bernard is here with the story and some answers.
Yeah, the center of this controversy, believe it or not, is chalk. Occupiers were writing free speech messages on the sidewalk when the city manager showed up and told them to stop. There's a big police presence outside Stockton City Hall, scene of an alleged chalking. Diana Buettner and fellow occupiers were writing on the sidewalk about the Constitution and free speech.
It's part of a protest, and I was exerting my First Amendment right.
City manager Bob Dice was leaving for lunch and told occupiers to stop defacing the sidewalk. That's when it happened, and it was caught on camera. Was it a shove, a push, or an accidental brush?
I attempted to draw the other half of my heart, and Mr. Dice took it upon himself to push me aside with his leg. As a teacher, I understand that that's an assault. If I were to do that to a student, I would lose my job.
This camera phone video was taken moments after the incident. Bob Dice phoning the police about the chalk defacing public property. Diana Buettner made her own call to police about the alleged altercation.
Were you injured at all?
No, I was not.
But witnesses know exactly what they saw.
Was this really an assault or a case of somebody bumping into somebody?
I would say it would be an assault because if you're looking at me as a left end.
So the city doesn't really have much to say about this. They consider the incident an overblown overreaction. And clearly, a bankruptcy filing is taking precedent over some chalk and an alleged shoving match.
If there was any contact, it was accidental and not intentional.
City Manager Dice had no comment about the incident.
I think the city is overblown in its reaction to sidewalk chalk. I don't think my response to and the purpose for my sidewalk chalking is overblown at all.
Diana Buettner says she plans to press charges and much more.
Apparently, some other members of Occupy have now decided that we really need to ask for the man's resignation because that's not okay.
Well, it's not clear when they plan to ask for that resignation. Stockton police declined to investigate because there was no clear altercation, so they're passing it on to the DA's office, which may or may not review the case. Yes, we did have some fun with the story, but both sides believe there was a clear overreaction to whatever happened today. Again, nobody hurt, nobody bruised, nobody scratched.
All right, including our reporter.
Yes. Okay. It just doesn't sound like there's enough evidence there to go forward with the prosecution right now, he said, she said. All right.
Okay.
Cornell, thanks.
And, of course, that's your standard mainstream media response to this. In fact, what's happening here, I don't know. There's no discussion of whether people chalking messages on the sidewalk in Stockton are getting cited or arrested or harassed, as they are in Santa Cruz. In 2000, and I believe it was 2, Becky Johnson was arrested and held in jail on bail for writing on, not on the sidewalk, because it had been pointed out that though there's no real law against writing on the sidewalk, there's something law about marks on the sidewalk, never much enforced, but used against activists when they were opposing the extension to the anti-homeless laws in 2002 that extended the forbidden sitting zone, interestingly enough, from, I guess it was from 6 feet to 14 feet. Johnson and Tim Rinker were taken to court. They actually used the unusual take me to a magistrate defense, which where they demanded to be taken to court immediately to see if there was probable cause. And they were ultimately convicted of chalking, even though it was political chalk, even though it was erasable chalk.
And then Johnson, in order to avoid this penalty again, wrote on the curb, because there is no law against writing on the curb. She was arrested for vandalism, even though this is erasable chalk and it was a First Amendment activity, held in jail on bail. And she was, I believe that charge was, if it wasn't dropped, it was lessened, but she, you know, there is still this practice in Santa Cruz of criminalizing people who chalk on the sidewalk, even if it's an erasable chalk, even if they agree to clean it up afterward. Unless, of course, it's a politically correct group or a large enough group that the city doesn't want to really press the issue because there's going to be consequences. That's one of the virtues of the Occupy group, that there were enough people that all the charges against the Occupy group for lodging, which were bogus, they were people were essentially exercising First Amendment activity at night in front of the courthouse, and all the charges for trespass, even after the 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. no trespass signs, for the first time in Santa Cruz history, without any public discussion, without any public vote, went up, those charges were all dropped in court. And I think that was because there was a large enough, and there still is a large enough residual Occupy movement to make those kinds of charges the subject of such outrage that they don't want to proceed. Unfortunately, this is not the case with the Santa Cruz 11, which I think has frightened a lot of people more, mainly because of the overcharging by District Attorney Bob Lee and the peculiar kind of shock and awe tactics where there was no arrests or citations of people during the occupation of the bank, which is what the Santa Cruz 11 case was all about, a peaceful occupation of the 75 River Street, 3.5 year vacant bank, which was then emptied by the occupiers themselves 3 days later. But then 2 months after that, the activists were arrested at their homes, taken to jail, charged with 2 felonies and 2 misdemeanors, possible 7 year sentence each, and were still in court. I'm one of them who are facing these charges, half of us for reporting on them, for being in the building reporting on them, supposedly in the building. I was in the building, I admit it, and I've always admitted it, as was a lot of other people in and out. But these charges have frightened people, I think, and there certainly has been some support for us, and the judges have thrown out every charge that's come down the pike so far when they've reached the preliminary hearing stage. But it's a mixed bag. You know, it's hard to say what will happen, but I still have the feeling that in the case of the Santa Cruz 11, they're able to use a vandalism sort of smearing, even though none of the people arrested did any vandalism, and none of the people arrested abetted any vandalism. Quite the contrary, you might say they tried to stop any vandalism, or at least that was what those 11 tried to stop the vandalism, because I don't think they were even in the building for a long enough time, at least the people that I know and I've spoken to about this. But there were signs in the building, as I understand it, from the police evidence and from secondhand accounts that stated, you know, no vandalism and so forth. So it's interesting that this is an attempt to really freak out and frighten and drive away and just shut down protests that might come up in the future that might involve, oh, I don't know, trespassing on the sacred corporate property of these large banks who, of course, have no problem seizing personal property, homes, and are doing so at a hungry rate all the time. We'll continue to do so in spite of changes that were made in the law at a state level that allow people to sue and are supposedly stopping this dual track. Hey, we're foreclosing on you. Hey, we're helping you negotiate your loan. Ooh, we don't know who to send you to. Whoopie-doo. We'll get back to you, and we never do. That kind of documented abuse that has been happening all over the country with the major foreclosure artist, the major bankster, Wells Fargo Bank, which is the bank that held the lease to the 75 River Street, which is the subject of the current prosecutions. But chalking was the issue here, and chalking is something in Santa Cruz. In a way, we get an inkling of the kind of complete disrespect for First Amendment rights that local authorities have, unless there's an active countervailing force. And this was pointed out on this show repeatedly, the ACLU locally is absolutely useless. National Lawyers Guild has only gotten involved when Occupy became a strong force. Until that, we heard nothing from the National Lawyers Guild. And the attorneys who've been trying to fight this case, one of them was Jonathan Gettleman, who fought the case of Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon, two homeless people who, in a very bizarre and costly action by the city attorney's office, have been banned from sleeping in the downtown area. Actually, every homeless person is banned from sleeping everywhere in the city, but they only face an infraction penalty. This was a civil lawsuit that forced them to face a contempt of court or jailing penalty, and they still face it now, although I believe... I think I did an interview recently with Lito, Miguel de Leon. Anna Richardson has moved on and is apparently married up in Scotts Valley and doing pretty well, no longer houseless. I'm glad for that for her. But the fact is that people who are houseless do have to sleep at night, and for the city to spend such stuff, such huge amounts of money, and use unusual procedures. And I guess my point here is that there are some attorneys like Gettleman who defended them and is currently defending pro bono Linda LeMaster, who is charged with... She's the last of the Peace Camp 2010 cases, if you don't count Commander X, who fled the jurisdiction. Chris Doyen, curb hugger Chris, as I used to call him, really articulate fellow who was...
Forgive me, I have to pause briefly.
I guess I'll simply get rid of this particular web page. But I did want to talk about, you know, this Stockton chalking incident and point out how the mainstream coverage sort of attempts to trivialize. It's not so much that whether the city manager assaulted her or not, though that's important for sure. But whether there, for to me, whether there's a crackdown on people who chalk in Stockton. And the encouraging part of the story is that there are people who are willing to stand up and do it, or shall we say kneel down and do it. Occupy Stockton still lives, and I think Occupy throughout the country still live. I'm going to have to do some research on that and offer you more of a better update. I've also found Berkeley Council Member Arguin's alternative to the sit-lie ordinance, which I've kind of mentioned a number of times, but I haven't really discussed or read much about. I'm going to read a bit about it now. This is a press release of his in the Berkeley Daily Planet. And this was before the city council decided to put it on the ballot and ignore his proposal. After exhaustive research and consulting with stakeholders, Councilmember Arguin will be introducing his comprehensive report and compassionate sidewalks proposal at city council with hopes it would head off an expensive ballot measure. Sit-lie would simply sweep an intractable problem off the sidewalks, but while other communities have reacted in frustration, we should remain resolved in our compassion and unrivaled capacity to find thoughtful solutions. That's Berkeley at its best. We shouldn't waste money printing punting an unneedlessly divisive issue to the voters, and we can come together and adopt the proposal now that will help those in need and make our sidewalks accessible to everyone. You know, I don't even... This sounds like an attempt to say, well, you know, there really is a problem with people sitting on the sidewalks. And I don't think that was ever shown in any of the documentation I've read about this. Admittedly, I'm reading lefty sources, but you would have thought that somewhere in there would be a report that indicates, oh, you know, all kinds of arrests for blocking the sidewalk at different places, thousands of complaints from merchants. But as with our own anti-homeless ordinances like the parking lot panic law, which makes it illegal to sit down in your own car and read a book or chat with people outside your car or chat with people outside someone else's car, the only thing you can do is go into your parking lot, park your car, and or retrieve it, or walk directly through. Those are now the only alternatives that you have in city parking lots and city parking garages, which take about 10 square blocks downtown. This is less civil liberty than you have in private parking lots. I mean, you would thought that on the government space, since you're a taxpayer, you'd have more rights. You have less rights. Because bigots have essentially taken over
and special interests have taken over the whole tools of the government. It's become a mechanism for them to use. But again, getting back to this press release. And let's see if I can find the actual specifics. It's in another website, of course, which is unfortunate. But what do we got? By the way, in case you just tuned in, you're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. The name of this show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. And I'll be chatting at you till 1. If you've got stuff you want to air about the latest attacks on poor and homeless people or the attacks on the campsites, not the websites. Campsites are perhaps more important to people who are trying to survive than websites. Anyway, the recommendation from this council member in Berkeley, instead of making it illegal to sit down on the sidewalks during the day, is direct the city manager to convene a working group of representatives, city council, city staff, the homeless, and police review commissions and other stakeholders such as business owners, homeless persons, attorneys representing homeless clients, students, and service providers to develop a compassionate sidewalks plan to specifically focus on enforcement of existing laws and how it can be improved, what new laws are needed, if any, consideration of community-appropriate standards of behavior, maintain a common commitment to enforcing those behavior-based standards, more affordable housing to create a path to self-sufficiency. Where is there a gap in services? How can we improve the delivery of existing services and or provide additional ones? How can we expand or improve the effectiveness of the ambassador program? That's the Berkeley version of the horrible hosts, which we have here in Santa Cruz. Again, this is a guy who's trying to, you know, he's trying to kiss all sides to find some way to beat back the sitting initiative, the sitting ban initiative, which he was not successful in doing. He's going to request that the city manager, chief of police, and city attorney look at existing quality of life laws. Gobbledygook for anti-homeless laws, and explore whether it's quality of life for those who are well-to-do and in houses or in homes, and whether laws need to be modified to ensure more effective enforcement. Explore employing a behavior-based enforcement approach to existing laws, not necessarily focusing on whether someone is sitting on a sidewalk, but whether they are engaged in an activity that substantially interferes with other people's use of the sidewalk and public safety. It is important not to criminalize essential functions of daily life and focus on specific behavior that is disorderly and may pose a threat to public safety. Explore amending statutory dogs no lying to prohibit stationary dogs at one specific location for more than 4 hours, except for guide dogs, signal dogs, or service dogs as provided by state law, and whether to require stationary dogs to be muzzled after a 2-hour period. Explore the enforcement of existing city laws relating to regulating objects on sidewalks. Employ warnings prior to any issuance of a citation issued for non-threatening behavior in the public space that does not pose a danger to public safety to try to achieve voluntary compliance. That's a nice sounding thing, but in Santa Cruz, there's a warning provision that is a part of the sitting ban, though I'm not quite sure of its constitutionality, since I think the warning provision last time resulted in the law in 1994 being thrown out as unconstitutional before it was passed again by the Kennedy-Rutkin-Matthews City Council at that time. And also, warnings are kind of a tricky business. Officers Winston, Warren, and Forbes, who roam the downtown, I don't know if Forbes is still there, but Warren and Winston are going after criminal sitters and criminal tablers and criminal guitarists and all that sort of thing, will tell you, at least their victims have told me, that they weren't warned, but they were told they were warned before, sometime in the past, and therefore that's sufficient for them to come up and give them something between $100 and $300 citation, which usually gets ignored, and then you have the city passing laws that say, oh, ignore 3 of these tickets, you go to jail for up to 6 months, which is a law that the Don Lane City Council is supporting and has passed. So things get worse, and they're also looking worse for other reasons as well, which I'll be talking about later in the show. Direct the city manager, this alternate proposal by Jesse Arguin of Berkeley suggests, to explore the creation of free lockers and storage space for the homeless, requiring that individuals wishing to use storage space voluntarily agree to allow their items to be checked for weapons or drugs, and that perishable items are not allowed to be stored. Again, he's trying to cover all these bases. We don't have storage space for homeless people anymore out of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I understand it. They removed all the lockers, and I don't know if they are arranging to put them back or if they're still playing around with the idea of additional administrative space, office space. Again, in Berkeley, this proposal is to explore expanding the host ambassador program to other commercial districts in Berkeley, having late evening ambassadors, including the funding needed to expand the program. I don't know if the ambassadors are worse than the horrible hosts here in Santa Cruz. I haven't talked to people about them or heard much about them, but the hosts are simply the eyes and ears of the police force here and don't provide, they have a friendly smile, but they're really doing the same thing. They're removing your right to be in a public space at the behest of a merchant or just for the hell of it, because it's, quote, the law. Encourage the hiring of licensed mental health clinicians to accompany ambassadors in their patrols. And again, this is a part of the Santa Cruz, quote, liberal response to calls for crackdown on the homeless. Oh no, we just need more mental health people running around, you know, cleaning up the streets. Again, this is an attempt to deal with, this is just a social control mechanism that has very little to do with actually addressing underlying causes of problems that develop on the streets, which have to do with the fact people don't have any housing, don't have any jobs, and don't have any, and they're being harassed in public spaces, not feeling too happy about it. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hi, Robert. It's Red.
Hey, Red. What's the good word? Aren't you one of those houseless people we've heard about?
Oh, yeah. I heard that FBI is going to get 6 months. Yeah,
you already did. He served a couple weeks of it. Now he's going to go back to jail on the 8th.
Yeah, and, you know, Gary got 8 months. Because he can't sleep anywhere.
Actually, Gary got the same sentence, but he also got an additional 2 years for, but it's suspended. Yeah, it's just 2 years, but it's suspended. So his 2 year sentence is not what's happening. He comes up on the 24th of August before Judge Gallagher, who will then, or whatever visiting judge is there, to send him to jail. Ed has already gone back to court, and he's going to be sent to jail, but he's trying to appeal it again. It's difficult for him because he doesn't have the legal, you know, he needs more legal backing. But you're out.
That's just sick.
Yeah,
know?
It is.
Yeah, it's like, where does the judge go and everybody else go when they go home at night? They get to go to sleep. But we can't go to sleep. We have to stay up all night. But there's no food, restaurant, there's nowhere to go, no coffee shop. And we have to stay up all night and wander around doing nothing, and then get arrested for vagrancy or theft.
But full disclosure, Red, you sleep in a vehicle, right?
Yeah, we have an RV, yeah. And we have to move it around because the basement guy, Hades, we call him Hades. I was cooking dinner in just outside Safeway where I bought food, right? And I was cooking dinner, and he sneaks up and puts a ticket for $160 for an abandoned vehicle.
And that was when we were inspected at the time?
Yeah. And then one time, we're making love, and it's after 5 a.m. It's 5:20. And he sneaks up. I look over, and I see this shadow coming across the windshield. And he sticks the $160 ticket on the windshield for abandoned vehicle, and it was after the time where he could give us a ticket. He's faking tickets. He hauled off an RV with a handicapped man in it that couldn't walk, and he refused to leave the RV, so they hauled off the RV with him in it.
What was the name of that handicapped man, do you know?
Even if they have a vehicle, we park it in a place where there's no signs regulating, and staying out of the way, and we pick up litter that other people leave and clean up the place and make it look beautiful, and we get cited, and then they're going to tow our vehicle, so so we had to move out of the town, so we were in ghetto. And on the no-sleep van, where we were heading in up, me and Grove, Red and Grove, we're heading up with Ed Wright and you, Robert North. Remember that? And
Let me ask you a question, Red.
Here.
Let me ask you a question.
What?
You know the name of the man who was towed away in the vehicle, the handicapped man?
Do you know the name of the guy who towed away in the vehicle?
No,
let me talk. No.
How long ago was that, you know? How long ago was that?
What?
How long ago was that, you know?
What we got for our tickets for heading up the no-sleep van, we went to court, and we both got a $100 fine, which we didn't pay. We just moved downtown.
Let me ask you this. This $100 fine, was that for the abandoned vehicle or for a sleeping ticket? Red? I'm sorry.
Over at the courthouse and City Hall? Yeah, we went to court on it, and the judge broke it down because I have terminal cancer, and she broke it down to $100 each.
Let me ask you, was that $100, that was for the abandoned vehicle, not the sleeping van, right?
No, it was for the sleeping van.
What about these abandoned vehicle tickets? Have you ever been to court on those?
We just, like, left town.
How many of them have you gotten?
We're in a secret location.
We're in a secret location.
How many of the abandoned vehicle tickets have you gotten?
How many abandoned vehicle tickets we got?
Here, give me the phone.
Here, talk to Crow, okay? Love
all right,
you, Robert.
Thank you, Red.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, babe.
Hello, Robert.
Hey,
and all
Crow.
The airway listeners out there, all two of them.
Mm. Yeah, well, at least two. We know that for sure.
At least two. So anyway, I got like about $6,000 worth of fucking tickets in Santa Cruz, and most of them are from an abatement fuckhead, you know?
Do you remember how many actual abandoned vehicle tickets you got, more or less? Like a dozen, five?
Oh, about a dozen. Yeah. About a dozen. Or $100 each. You know, so that's about $1,000-some.
This is about this is Joe Habe that we're talking about, gave you those tickets?
Yeah, Hades.
Habe.
Habe. From fucking hell.
For those who are wondering, his actual name is Habe, H-A-E-B-E. He was a lieutenant, and he was very instrumental in leading raids at City Hall in 1996 when people were sleeping there with the City Hall Sleepers Vigil. We actually had a song called Maybe Habe. You know,
yeah,
I remember that one. Maybe
Habe,
you'll be fair. Maybe
Habe,
you will care. Maybe Habe, you will.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was quite, we used to sing that one. But you know,
yeah.
He's no longer, I guess he's with the police department, but he's no longer there in an active capacity, but he's sort
No, he's retired, and he's working with the police department, being the dick he wants to be. You know, and it basically, you know, what happened in the past is that the higher-ups said, okay, we're not going to be fucking using our troops to fucking patrol homeless people in vehicles, so we're going to have this guy wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go out and fucking beat on fucking people's vehicles and threaten them with arrest and or towing their vehicles, you know? I mean,
he's evil about it.
Yeah, I mean, we've been in Watsonville, and Watsonville's been very, very good to us, okay? And they don't come around at 4 o'clock in the morning. If the parking people got a problem, they come at 9 or 10, give you a little tiny notice instead of this big fucking sticker they stick on the fucking window that you can impossible peel off when you do move your vehicle. And they just give you a little warning notice, you know, and then they just, you just move along, you know, it's no big fucking deal.
Are we talking about the 72-hour move-along law that says you got to move along every...
Yeah, it's just everybody can get that.
Now,
you know, even if you got a brand new fucking car and you're a millionaire.
Now, has Lieutenant Habe or former Lieutenant Habe been, at least insofar as he's been, has he been respecting that law in terms of giving you 72 hours to leave? I mean,
well, first off, he beats on your fucking vehicle, okay? And if you don't wake up, he puts the sticker on your fucking vehicle, okay? The big, giant, fucking yellow, orange sticker, okay? But, I busted Habe's the other fucking day because he searches out people that he picks on, okay, because there's other vehicles that have been on the streets for 2 decades not moving because they're either Locatelli people or friends of the city or people he knows, and he doesn't fuck with them. And I busted him because he was given a ticket to a guy, I guess, across the street. It was just a van. Nobody was living in it. Just a van that was parked there for too many days. And I said, hey, Habeas, how come this van has been sitting in front of this fucking guy's house that you probably know, and you never fucking harass him, you know? And he walked over and, oh, well, I'll mark it now. Just pretend that he's actually doing something, you know? But he's a fucking liar, and he's a fucking typical fucking fucked up pig, okay?
Wasn't it one time, Crow, you were going to do some video surveillance of these guys, right? And that, or,
yeah, you know, but you know what? It's just like, who are you going to complain to? When you complain to the fucking parking people, you know who fucking looks over the fucking complaint? Habeas.
Well, yeah,
so
I mean, he's following in the footsteps of Chief Vogel, who investigated himself for illegal
That's
surveillance back in 2006.
And
that
it's
was
bullshit.
A famous scandal.
That's why nobody's been able to do anything to these fuckers, you know, of harassment and you know, and focusing on fucking homeless people, because they know what they're doing. They have it all figured out. How to fucking tow people's vehicles, how to harass people, put boots on vehicles. They just keep you giving you those $100 tickets, and then all of a sudden, after two or three tickets, or I think it's five tickets, they can tow it immediately.
I think it's three tickets, actually, now.
Yeah.
So watch
so
your vehicle.
They know what they're doing. You know, the Santa Cruz Police Department knows what they're doing.
Well, what about this latest crackdown on homeless people on the riverbed and the parks and the campground, the campsites?
Well, to be quite honest, most of them are a bunch of fucking drug addicts. You know, and a bunch of pigs that leave a bunch of shit all over the fucking place. You know, a bunch of fucking cranksters. So I don't really have any sympathy for the fuckers, to be quite honest. I mean, every person that's homeless, I got sympathy for. I mean, there's a lot of homeless people, you know, I could say like us, that, you know, are not all fucked up, leave a bunch of trash, shooting drugs up in your fucking arm, and being a bunch of scumbags, you know? So, I mean, I do understand why they got to fucking crack down on the bullshit, because I've seen it. I came across camps where there's just fucking needles everywhere in our state park, and I'm fucking like, this is bullshit, you know? And you know, I can understand a certain amount of it, you know? But there's also a certain amount where
What percentage of the homeless camps, Crow, would you say are in that, you know, the category?
I would say 25%. Of the 100%, 25%.
And what percentage of those, of these busts?
Because I've been there. I've been on the street. I've been down
Crow,
in the fucking levee. I've been all that shit.
I understand,
you know?
Crow. In the last 2 weeks, there have been police reports of massive crackdowns, ticketing, and citations, but very little mention of drugs being seized. What do you think, what percentage of the camps being cracked down on are these camps you talk about?
Well, you know, as far as lately, you know, I don't know their perspective on what they're doing. They might be just cracking down on people that, you know, are just trying to fucking live. You know, but I can't say for lately, but I know in the past of what I've seen personally and what I've dealt with personally with people, because I am part of the fucking drug culture and I'm proud of it. You know, I'm not saying I do every fucking drug in the sun, but I have my share of fucking drugs that I've done, and there's some things I don't do anymore and some things that I still do, you know. And it's just like, I know the ins and outs. I've been there, done that, okay? And I'm a sub of it's not too pretty, and I understand it, you know? But a lot of times they're using...
You know, I'm going to stop you, Crow, because I don't disagree with you. But I mean, when I look at the stats the police are giving, I don't see a lot of talk about drugs. And frankly, I don't. You know, I'm less. I think drugs should be decriminalized. I think it should be medicalized.
Me too.
And I don't.
I agree.
You know, on the other hand, you know, but the point is, insofar as this is being done with no alternatives for homeless people and with Habe continuing to run around and go after people like yourself,
I agree.
I am more concerned with that, and that's why I'm looking for the figures on that. It sounds like you don't have a lot of figures on it.
I understand what you're saying.
So you don't have a lot of stats for us at the moment, right?
Well, the only thing is my personal experience, and it's not a statics. It's not a stat figure.
No, but
okay?
I mean in terms of connections with other people. In your personal experience in the last few weeks, have you met many people whose campsites have been busted?
Oh, no. I fucking left fucking Santa Cruz. Fuck Santa Cruz. You know? I don't want to be harassed. I've been on in Watsonville. You know? And it's been fucking
calling?
Very, that's like I said, I've been in Watsonville and fuck Santa Cruz.
Are you been,
those cops and everybody else?
Have you been calling from Watsonville? Is that where you're calling from now?
Yeah, because we don't get your station, you know?
I got you.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. We don't have a computer yet, you know, to look online. So we can't keep up with everything.
I know that Red was suffering from a rather intractable cancer situation that's recurred. How's that going?
Well, now she has terminal liver disease and cancer, and they want to do a probe, and if they did the probe that day, she could die if she keeps bleeding out. They were like, fuck it. You know, we're just going to fucking just live her life and fucking, grow herb and fucking just do it that way instead of taking all, not taking all the fucking pills that the fucking doctor, I mean, they've been dicking us around with that fucking bullshit, too.
I quit taking the pills and I'm
here, you talk to them.
I quit taking the pills, and last week I rode a bicycle.
Very good.
Instead of laying in bed and puking.
Let me ask you, Red. I think I heard from you in an earlier message that there was some kind of marijuana crackdown, because I know you use marijuana for what? For pain reduction and appetite and things like that?
Yeah, yeah. We all have license cards for the state, yeah. And the police and the sheriff saw our crops, and they were all okay. And the landlord, because we got a greenhouse over on where our location, right? The landlord, I saw because we got a greenhouse, and he said he's going to bring the feds. So we had a lawyer come here, and the lawyer came on the property. We got him a retainer, and the landlord never showed up. So we got a restraining order against him.
You got a restraining order against the landlord?
Yes.
Wow, that's is this a big landlord who owns a lot of property, or just owns your property?
It's a big ass ranch, yeah, and it's got like what, 5 acres?
Yeah, it's a little somewhere.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because I know in Los Angeles, the LA City Council recently passed a law that shut down all cannabis dispensaries. Every single one of the 900 dispensaries in LA has been declared illegal.
I got something to say.
They already did that in San Diego.
In L.A.
In L.A., yeah. They shut them all down.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about L.A. That's what I'm saying. So,
yeah.
And also, of course, in Santa Cruz, Ken Sampson's club is apparently shut down as well, although I think there are still clubs in the county that are still open and that maybe more are even opening up.
Oh, my God.
So there's a struggle going on there.
Yeah, I got a new T-shirt for you.
Oh, yeah?
The T-shirt's going to say, medical marijuana, F'K, Obama. Medical marijuana, fuck you, Obama. It's going to be the best.
Yeah, well, Obama, who promised to lighten up, of course, his agents have been tightening and cracking down instead. Well, listen, Crow. Thank you. And if you have any more reports, if you have any more reports from Watsonville, thank you, Red. You're the one who called in.
Oh yeah, hold on. Ted wants to say thank you.
Hello.
Hey, Red. Thank you for calling in. And do you have any final messages for us? Any other thoughts you want to pass on?
I love you, man.
Thank you, babe. I appreciate that.
American marijuana is good for pain. Yeah, you got a license and everything to grow it. Leave us the fuck alone. All right.
Thank you, babe.
Thank you, Robert. Love you.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Red and Crow calling from Watsonville. They can't even hear the show, but they are calling in to say hi. Thank you for that. You, too, can call in, particularly if you're listening, 831-427-3772, or even if you're not listening. I mean, that's okay with me. Well, that's a fast response. Well, I'll buy that. Hey, you're on Free Radio with Robert. Hello? Hello? Turn down your radio. Perhaps you're getting a delayed signal. Turn down your radio, perhaps. Anybody there? Going once? No. Again, the phone number is 427-3772 if you want to get in touch. Yeah, in the last 2 weeks before July 23rd, there were a total of 138 citations issued, 44 arrests, 74 campsites identified and posted with warnings to vacate, and 19 campsites, quote, cleaned, which that means destroyed. Let's see what we got here. You are on free radio, I hope.
Hey, Robert, how's it going?
Doing good. Who's this?
Andrea.
Hey, Andrea. I hear you're hanging in there, but you're kind of under the weather somewhat.
Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to touch base a little bit. I went to court yesterday morning, and Friday morning, and when the police came up into my storage locker on the night of May 26th, and John Colby, he's done some good things. I don't know what exactly he sent to the district attorney, but all I know is I got there Friday morning about 9:30, got in there. The public defender was up in front of the judge, and she kind of, you know, moved her finger for me to come up there, so I went up there, and basically, it looks like it was all bullshit to begin with, and basically, you know, I was pretty much in and out of there at 10 o'clock, and it all basically came down to, you know, obey all laws for the next 6 months, and really all I got to do is go back on January 28th for them to basically throw it out. Why they couldn't throw it out on Friday, I'm not sure, but that was the extent of that. However, I've been having some problems over here at the Homeless Services, Lack of Services Center. There's this church that comes in over here on Sunday mornings that does the breakfast. And there's a gentleman that works at the door, and he's been singling me out on and off for a while now. And I'm well certain it has to do with, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not a religious person. I don't do the Jesus Christ trip, whatever. And last Sunday morning, this preacher was there, and, you know, everybody, like, bowed their heads and said the prayer. But I didn't, and I think that's my right. And he proceeded to tell me, well, next week, you got to go to the back of the line. He keeps insisting that I'm not disabled. But yet, there is this other woman that was there who is obviously mentally disabled, but who has no physical limitations whatsoever, and he lets her stroll on in, but, you know, she's one of those, oh, yeah, praise Jesus Christ and this and that, whatever. That's all good for her. But because I didn't bow my head and I wasn't into their little prayer, you know, he fucks with me. And this morning it got particularly bad. I walked over to the cafeteria this morning, and he was letting, you know, the next five people go in the door. So I walk up and I proceed to go in the door, and he literally came in and manhandled me and said, whoa, whoa, you, get out of here, get out there, you know, and grabbed me and was shoving me back, and I was fighting him, and he shoved me back all the way to the door. And then the asshole, lot security, really didn't bother to stick up for me at all, so he's going down for that, and he goes, do you want your breakfast? And I said, well, yeah. So he goes in, gets a tray, and brings it outside. So I had to eat my pancakes and my little strip of bacon outside. Wasn't even allowed in the cafeteria, so couldn't get any milk for my cereal. Couldn't even get any coffee. So they're going to go down for that. I'm pretty pissed about it, you know. And the way they, you know, this just all the bullshit that's going on. That this
what
like
was the reaction of other people? Were other people supportive of you or not?
No, everybody just kind of stood there minding their own business and whatever.
And what's the name of this church that does this?
You know, that's the funny thing. I walked over to the gentleman that was at the barbecue pit cooking the eggs, and I said, excuse me, sir, what church are you from? He says it's called Elevation. And I said, oh, really? I said, and that's in the phone book? And he says, uh-huh. So I come over here to my storage locker, I pull out the phone book, I go in the yellow pages, and naturally there was no church in there called Elevation. So he lied to me.
Do we know the names of any of these workers who are with the church in the morning? I think it's either Dennis Adams Church or the other guy. There's a sort of a Bible church that shows up there. Or maybe there are more churches that are showing up. But, you know, I got two things to say. First, obviously, I don't like to hear what happened to you. It sounds discriminatory. Secondly, you're disabled. You have a disability. What is your disability? You use a walker.
Yeah.
And what? Because of what disability problems?
I have autism.
arthritis and fibromyalgia. I have sclerosis in my lower back. And just recently in April, I've been diagnosed with blood loss-induced anemia. So I'm suffering from a lot of fatigue. Oh, and that too. Yeah, and this bullshit. Oh, my God, Robert. You cannot fucking sit anywhere around shelter. I mean, you stay in the loft, man. You're basically in a prison camp. You know, you got to sign in by 45. Once you sign in, you can't go past the smoking gazebo. You know, there is no going off, you know, the campus to medicate. Oh, no, that's forbidden. And as far as that no impact zone, according to John Colby, that's a bunch of bullshit.
Right.
You know.
But again, getting back to this religious stuff, I mean, and that's that actually what you're talking about now is probably more important. But, you know, if
yeah.
you know, if the Homeless Lack of Services Center is receiving government funding, it should not be allowing religious discrimination there, which apparently seems to be the case if your account is accurate, you know. I think that's pretty hefty, and I mean, that's pretty, that's telling to me. I know also that Colby debated Mayor Don Lane, who's also on the board of directors of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, on community TV. That show should be coming on air, I think, early next month. And I'll be releasing the audio version of that show, which, you know, I think Colby was struggling with a host who really wanted not to really put the mayor on the spot, although Sandra Lee, the show person, somehow thinks she's a great challenger of authority, but she has a ways to go, I got to tell you, in my view. But, you know, I'm glad that she was allowing that to happen. But hopefully we'll be able to get more about, you know, Colby's attempt to get he was able to get you back into the Homeless Lack of Services Center, but you are now, what, you're camped on the first floor, or you have to hobble your way up the steps, or what's the story with it?
I have to go up the stairs. Yeah, the stairs are a real bitch. My knees hurt all the time. However, I've gone from number 16 to number 17 to number 11 to number 6 to number 2 on the River Street list.
Has no stairs, right?
Yeah. And John told me that, like, none of the staff from over there even showed up for that panel because, of course, they're all too scared, and they should be. And, you know, what happened over there at the cafeteria this morning, this is just one more thing that's going to add to all this shit going down, you know.
So you're
going
to talk to John about this, I imagine.
Oh, yeah, because I talked to him, I've been talking to him this last week, and I told him about this, you know, this gentleman fucking with me last Sunday morning, and then I called and left a couple messages this morning for him, you know, letting him know what happened. So yeah, I'm sure he'll be calling me sometime this afternoon.
You might also put in a written complaint to Martinez, the director of the Homeless Lack of Services Centers. You know, just
I'm going to write it out as a security incident report. I'm going to go down to Universal Copies in the morning, make copies of it, and basically go in the office. You know, tell Chris what happened and show it to him. And, you know, it's really funny that lot security idiot, you know, says, oh, I'm going to write you up. I said, go ahead, write me up. You know, I'm going to write it up, too. And then trying to say, well, I've heard from four people that you've been disrespectful. Oh, really? Well, first of all, what have I done to be disrespectful? Second of all, why is it that if I have been so disrespectful, why hasn't it ever come up until now? Until this incident happens.
Now, we've been on the air, and you were, it was depressing to see how exhausted you were, but you made it to the studio, and you were here about a month and a half ago, and at that time you mentioned that you and others have been thrown out of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, but then due to the intervention of Colby, you were readmitted. Has the last month and a half been any better because of Colby's intervention? John Colby is an activist who has been acting as your advocate even over the obstructions of the Homeless Lack of Services Center's management. Right.
Yeah, I wasn't thrown out of the shelter, but Steve and Mia were. In fact, Mia had shown up. Apparently, I can't remember what John said, but apparently Mia was supposed to be on that TV panel thing, and for some reason, at the last minute, the person that runs it excluded Mia out of it, and John felt really bad about that because, you know, he basically told her, yeah, come down to the studio and you can be on, you participate
well, you
in
know,
the
I
panel,
think
but
Andrea,
then at the last minute she wasn't allowed.
I think, Andrea, the problem was that, you know, I had told her it was earlier, and I thought it was, but
The show author had it between, I think, 7 and 8, and Mia had somewhere she had to be. So she couldn't stay. But, I mean, maybe there was an exclusionary element,
too. Oh, no, she was there.
I know she was there. I know she was there, but she had to leave early is what I know. But maybe you're right. Maybe she wasn't even allowed initially on the show. But what about my broader question? Are people who are disabled being treated any better at the Homeless Lack of Services Center and at your storage unit? Because that's what you went to court for on Friday. You were accused of what, being there? What was the crime?
It was possession of drug paraphernalia.
Oh, a pipe. They thought it was a crack. They claimed you had a crack pipe or something?
Yeah, and it had nothing in it but marijuana resin. And it's a long story.
Yeah.
But
have you found you're being treated any differently, and that others who are houseless are being treated differently, either with or without disabilities, because of, you think, people standing up, or has it gotten worse? What's been going on generally, you think?
Well, they're definitely retaliating, and there's another disabled guy there that's basically dying of cancer, Stan Willis, and they're retaliating against Stan, and they're kind of retaliating against me. But these two older gentlemen, one has a walker and one's in a wheelchair, and you know they see them as basically a non-threat, and they're not going to make any trouble for them. So you know they're okay with them. But for example, Shelley, the new lady there, you know, came running out to Steve one day, Steve Lizeau, telling him, "Oh, you know, Paul at HPHP's got you on the River Street list, and you don't have to worry about calling in every 3 days. Just when your name comes up, you know, you'll be notified." You know, but she didn't, and I guess for Ron, but they didn't do that for me. You know, I have to call in and check every 3 days.
Steve was the guy that you say they threw out, and that you had to be. He was out there for one night, and you voluntarily went out with him because you wanted him to have some protection and some company and somebody caretaking. And Mia, who was trying to give him a shower, was also thrown out with him for that reason. And then they were both readmitted the next day after pressure from John Colby.
Me and John.
And you and both of you, of course.
Yeah, I got the petition going, and then John did the rest of the footwork. I wasn't out that night.
Oh, you weren't out that night, but I'm sorry, Mia was, though.
Me and Steve were.
Right, yeah, thank you for correcting that. So you were still in. How are people regarding other people at the shelter? Are they... you're getting commended for what you're doing? Are you getting kind of... people are kind of shying away from you, or people...
Yeah.
Which?
I'm pretty much alienated. So, you know,
But you did get all these names on a petition. Now, how do you account for that?
What do you mean?
Remember the petition you turned in about concern?
Yeah.
Well, those people certainly, I mean, they're still around, aren't they?
I don't know. I'm not sure if some of those people are camping out and they're still around or what, but, yeah. And probably what it is, you know, I'm sure word's gotten around it. Oh, well, that lady, Andrea, oh, yeah, well, she's, you know, this place is going to get shut down. If it gets shut down and they lose their funding, it's all going to be her fault. You know, that's probably what's going on. I'm not sure, but, it's, you know, it wouldn't be not likely.
What have you heard about from shutting down of campsites outside the Homeless Lack of Service Center, the crackdown in the city? Have you heard anything around that?
Well, I was listening to the radio one morning, right after it first started up. I had heard that there, I guess you got different stats from me, I don't know. I heard there were 17 arrests or something. I think 17 arrests over, I can't remember how many, there were like over 70 citations issued. There were like 17 arrests. One was an unregistered sex offender. Another one was... somebody that had possession of heroin and intent to sell, and then they still had like 49 designated campsites that they're gonna hit, and then they were put this number out.
Yeah, I think those were the
any illegal campsites to call this toll free number.
Yeah, I think that was the first week, and that was also posted on the police blog. And for those who are interested, and you can go to the Santa Cruz Department Police blog and get the first 2 weeks. So we're talking with Andrea Morgan out at the Homeless Lack. Oh, actually, are you at the Homeless Lack of Services Center right now? Or?
No, I'm over public storage, actually.
And has storage now treating you differently and other people differently, you think? Or are they respecting you more? Or?
Not necessarily, but that bitch September, who's the property manager, seems to be kind of staying away from me. And, you know, because before, you know, I'm constantly being harassed every time I come over here, usually from her, but actually since John Colby stepped in and has done whatever he's done, she's kind of like backed away some.
Well, I appreciate the update, Andre. Anything you want to conclude with?
Not that I can think of right offhand, but, you know, there's always more bullshit to come, and, you know, I'm just tired of it all, and, you know, tired of this no-sitting bullshit. You can't sit anywhere. Oh, it's terrible. It's just absolutely terrible.
Well, thank you, Andre, and just don't sit down. Just keep standing up. That'll help.
Yeah, and now I'm having problems with my arms because so much of the time, I spend so much time sitting on my walker and laying my head down on my arm and having to switch arms that now the inside of my arms or in my wrist area hurt all the time, and they're actually tingling, and, you know, because I'd lay on one side for a while and my hand would start tingling and going numb, so I'd switch and lay on the other arm, that hand starts tingling and going numb, down the inside of my wrist and, like, on the inside of the base of my thumbs, it just constantly, there's always some sort of, like, a tingling sensation there, and they hurt, you know, so it sucks.
I hear you. Thanks, Andrea. Call again.
Yep. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Ashley Brilliant, recording in 2010, songs that were written in 1967. I'm going to be singing songs from my Haight-Ashbury songbook, and the first one is, "There is a digger in the town." I should possibly point out that the diggers were a sort of semi-mythical group in the Haight-Ashbury who did benevolent things, and they had a free store where everything was free called The Trip Without a Ticket, which is mentioned in this song. There is a digger in the town, he loves most everyone around, one around. He gives food and clothes and shelter if he can, to every needy girl and man. People say he must be crazy, helping other folks be lazy, giving things because he loves to, all for free, free, free. Are you kind friends, are you, or you, or you, by any chance a digger too, you can be a digger, anybody can, just really love your fellow man. At the Trip Without a Ticket, you'll find everything's indicative of peace and joy and friendliness and love, love, love. Haight-Ashbury's the place today, in San Francisco by the bay. If you dig the diggers, show your heart is big. Come on and help the diggers dig. This is the intercourse song. God rest you, girls and gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Science has the answers now, there's no more need to pray. For liking sexual intercourse, no consequence you'll pay. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. A miracle of chemistry and scientific skill, the dream of countless centuries they've managed to fulfill. Our lives are richer now because there's power in the pill. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. There's good news, too, for people who've been never at their ease in sexual matching, scared of catching something worse than fleas. All acts are pure now, drugs can cure venereal disease. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. But if by chance through circumstance you miss a pill or three, and you contract the worst disease, the one called pregnancy, they're on your side, they now provide abortions legally. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
And that was actually brilliant. He actually was in the studio about a year ago or so. Maybe it was 2 years since they came out in 2010. The song, you know, might be construed as a little out of date, what with AIDS and all that sort of thing, and herpes. Although AIDS, you know, now seems to be, I don't want to say it's under control, because that's not really true. However, there are certainly advances have been made. It's not the really devastating epidemic it was 20 years ago in the sense of how people felt when it first appeared, or 30 years ago, actually. But, you know, it's kind of a naive tune, I have to admit. I put a call through to activist Steve Plaich, running for Santa Cruz City Council, occupies Santa Cruz guy who will probably be at the 2 o'clock Occupy Santa Cruz get-together on the steps of the post office. It happens every Sunday, 2 o'clock. At least that's, I think, what he told me. In case you're interested, you might want to chat with him there, or you can call him on his own line, 466-6078 is his number, 466-6078. He also works with the Homeless Legal Assistance Project, so if you've gotten a ticket in the most recent round of police busts, you might want to give him a call and talk to him about that. You can find him tomorrow at the Red Church, the Calvary Episcopal Church on Lincoln and Cedar Streets, which has a 5-7 meal every Monday, and now has a interfaith satellite shelter program, very limited program, but for vulnerable people, you might be able to get into that program if you're lucky. Wow, this is interesting. I'm hoping that Steve will call in. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. He does suicide prevention and needle exchange, too, so he's always running around doing something. And I believe he'll be moderating or involved with a radio show, a television show that's coming up with the Santa Cruz 11 that'll be filmed in early August. I think I'll be on that show, too. And there's a new article out on the Santa Cruz 11 for those who are interested. It should be coming out in the next month's Street Spirit newspaper. I used to be a regular writer for that paper until they banned Becky Johnson for ideological differences on another issue, which was too bad. But there are really some excellent writing in Street Spirit newspaper. It's a newspaper sold by homeless people still. Available if you can find it in Santa Cruz. Usually there's only one or two vendors selling it. You can sometimes find a copy up at the Sub Rosa Cafe, or if you find the Huffmobile, one of the few cars that's covered with bumper stickers in Santa Cruz, my car, you'll be able to grab a copy of it. But there's going to be a long story on the Santa Cruz 11, which mostly recapitulates what those 11 activists have been going through and what the 7 who are still being charged are facing. Massive overcharging, essentially a political crackdown on activists in Santa Cruz who are reporters, pro-homeless civil rights activists, people who are concerned about and supportive of direct action, peaceful protests, such as the Occupy movement was doing all over the country and was doing in Santa Cruz particularly. Anyway, that's the August issue of Street Spirit. You can catch it. If you come to the Huff meeting, you can catch it. Huff is, again, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group I'm still working with. It happens every Wednesday morning, 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific, in case you want to check on in and check it out. And I'm curious here. Well, there's an article on Pamela Comstock in the Santa Cruz Sentinel. Pamela is a Take Back Santa Cruz co-founder, according to this story, which who is running for Santa Cruz City Council. And I wrote a response on the comments section, which strangely has disappeared from the comments section. I can't quite understand why, I find it not unprecedented that my comments somehow don't don't make the muster for some of this stuff. And I'm going to repost it right now. And I'll read a little bit. Comstock is, I mean, a lot of the city council essentially pushes the agenda of this, the Downtown Association, the Santa Cruz Neighbors, which Lynn Robinson, one of the most right-wing members of the council, founded or co-founded some years ago. But they aren't overtly Take Back Santa Cruz types. But in fact, you know, we have the same anti-homeless agenda and anti-homeless laws. But I don't know if I want to spend a lot of time on this Sentinel article. Here's a perhaps member of the public who might have something more interesting to say. Yo, you're on free radio again.
Oh, hi. This is a member of the public.
Hey, public.
How's it going, Roberto?
I think I recognize you, public, but I will maintain your anonymity. How are you doing?
Funny. Good, good. I didn't want to interrupt the Sentinel
of course.
Article. Sorry. Are you sure?
No. I'm happy. I think that if most people want to hear about Pamela Comstock or read about her, they can go to the website or pick up one of the Fish Wrap Sentinel article papers on the downtown. But you know, you go ahead. I'll make a few comments about her in a bit. But you know,
I know you will. I know.
Oh, yeah.
I can't silence you. That's not my attempt to
Certainly
remove.
Not.
I didn't. I wasn't put up to this call to try to subvert you.
You're
from
just
your
a friend
writing.
Of. You're a Pamela person, aren't you? Admit it. Come on.
No. Okay. Look. Don't out me on the radio. Look. Okay. Be cool. I have a question about police filming.
Yeah.
I hear that it's legal for us to film police in most states like this one.
Legal for what again? Say that one more time.
For people like us, citizens, non-police officers, to film police in most states like this one.
It's legal for you to what police?
Film.
Oh, yes, definitely. Oh, yeah, no question. It is, for sure.
Now, so I did. It wasn't in Santa Cruz, but my question is general. I filmed them while they were detaining some people I knew, and they started filming us and our possessions and recording us. What are their rights to film us and stuff if we're not being detained and we're not under suspicion to immediately start videoing?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I don't have a good answer
for
you. I have a speculative answer, you know, which you can play with.
Appreciate it.
The best thing to find out about Santa Cruz police is to write them a Public Records Act request, which is an email that says, Public Records Act request, Dear Sirs, I would like all information, documents regarding the general orders or policies you have regarding police officers' right to film the public and the retention of those films, how long you retain them, and the access the public has to them. You should write just and you'll get their policies. You can also try looking at the general orders that I got from the police department, which is their big volume of, you know, supposedly the policies
right.
The SCPD follows. And I posted that on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, which I encourage people to go check out. Just what you do is you go to that website, and then in the search function, you write in SCPD, maybe SCPD general orders or just SCPD, and then go through the past stories till you find the general orders. And then you have to find the order that talks about film if you can find it. Yeah. Another thing you can do is you can contact our good friend, Councilmember Don Lane, who also happens to be mayor at the time. And he's also on the public safety. Sorry. The public safety committee that supposedly oversees the police department, and ask him to determine exactly what the specific policies of the Santa Cruz Police Department are. But, you know, my initial thought is anybody, police department included, can film anybody else as a matter of a First Amendment right. But if they're doing so on the public time with your money, what you would think that there would have to be some kind of legitimate purpose for that. Now, the claim would not be, we have a potential crime scene here and so forth. But there are, again, you should probably ask for the Public Records Act request, or get me to ask, get somebody to ask by a Public Records Act request for the First Amendment policy or guidelines that the Santa Cruz Police Department has, if they have such guidelines at all. But, you know, you can do that by emailing them And you could also, again, you can ask Fuhrer Lane to look into that. Although the danger of that is you'll get, you know, some you know, response that you have no idea how valid it is, unless he can present you with the documents that also involve it. So I don't know if that helps.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's helpful. What they did was they started filming a friend's vehicle and possessions, and these are things that the people who I saw were concerned, even though they hadn't done anything wrong, they could be distorted to use against people, you know, just like an answer given to the cops when, you know, you don't have a lawyer present. Because the cops were looking for something that had happened, and we hadn't done anything.
Yeah, no, I understand.
So inside a vehicle, somebody's vehicle, and inside their possession seems a little, I mean, I don't have an expectation of privacy in the public, but... I don't know.
Well,
I like your comment about on our time with our money.
Yeah, well, the question also is that, can they retain those records, and are they available to other police agencies, and are they used as, you know, as evidence of, I don't know, as the basis for making claims elsewhere. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay. Hasta luego.
And the same to you. See you at the Occupy Santa Cruz maybe in 2 o'clock.
Oh, are you going to that?
I usually do. Look in on it. Not always, but usually, yeah.
Good for you. Keep up the good fight. Thanks a lot.
All righty. Bye-bye. And so I also think there's probably a meal going on at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. Boy, you know, it used to be at 12, and then I think it moved to 3 or vice versa. I gotta admit, I'm not sure when that meal is. But there is some kind of a meal happening, and maybe I'll get more information on that from a wise caller, or at least a caller who knows the answer to that question. I was going to try to do something, a follow-up on the Capitola rent control destruction. Capitola is the city that also has City Attorney John Barisoni double-dipping by, he's city attorney. He and his wife are city attorney for both Capitola and Santa Cruz, and they're... In both cities, vehicular or mobile home rent control has been destroyed by city council action with his advice, allegedly to, cut off or cut short or budget the city to essentially cave in to avoid lawsuits from large corporations that, like Manufactured Homes Corporation, which did in the De Anza and the Clearview courts here in Santa Cruz. There in Capitola, I actually did a little research on it about a year ago. There was, almost a year ago now. I think there was the Sunny Cove situation, and there were other Cabrillo mobile home estates, which are being essentially moved into 12-year leases, after which there would be no rent control. As a way, again, this is simply private pressure from profiteering landlords. And that's how it seems to me. And at the expense of poor people whose only recourse are these RVs, but landlords want to make more money. Yeah, it's beachfront property. Woo, 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 you know. They don't have enough yachts around the place, I guess. I don't know. It's just it's kind of disgusting. Briefly, comments about Pamela Comstock is featured in today's Santa Cruz Urinal, which some call the Sentinel. J.M. Brown has a story about her that she and her husband Craig and other relatives formed Take Back Santa Cruz in 2009. I am looking to see if I can find the comment I wrote earlier that just disappeared from the... it may have disappeared from my my own file as well, which is depressing, but not unprecedented. Let me see if I can find it. Anyway, she's definitely someone that, if you vote in these elections, please don't vote for her unless she does a complete change of perspective on how she regards poor and homeless people, because she's part of the gang, the Take Back Santa Cruz organization, at the very center of the Take Back Santa Cruz organization, it looks like. Let's see if I can find this. Yeah. Well, these things do disappear, I guess. It can happen. And it ain't here. And I don't see it. Wow. I find that depressing, though, that my splendid comments have disappeared from the website, and it may be they sometimes duplicate the website later in the next day, but I don't think that's what happened here, but we'll see. Anyway, Comstock is engaged in Comstockery, as we would say, perhaps based on her namesake. I don't know if it's her namesake, but Anthony Comstock was a famous prude, Puritan, and censorship maestro who ran the, he was, I think he was postmaster general, or he was involved with the post office in the 19th century, and who cracked down on erotic literature, or pornographic literature, depending on how you want to describe it, in the post office. Pamela Comstock is running for the Santa Cruz City Council, and she's already been endorsed by the Take Back Santa Cruz Stocking Horses, Hillary Bryant and Lynn Robinson, and David Chereses. And she was on the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. She does, I got to say, Comstock does support one thing that I approve of, and I actually put that into this comment that has disappeared from the Sentinel website. She favors more accountability of the city council in terms of meetings, more mass meetings where council members have to answer questions. In a way, it's kind of like what Ed Fry, who wants with his full spectrum democracy. He's an activist with Occupy Santa Cruz, who's facing 6 months in jail, as I think I mentioned before, on August. It is August 8th, isn't it? I keep thinking August 4th for some reason, but no, I think it's August 8th. And Comstock does seem to be, you know, part of a grassroots movement, a right-wing grassroots movement with Annalisa Cube and Dexter Cube, her husband, who formed this group, which Take Back Santa Cruz, which has these flash mobs which show up and do so-called positive loitering, but also engage in pressuring local merchants to eliminate payphones so that they aren't used for, quote, drug deals. Or any other deals, I guess, which has a serious impact on homeless people. I've taken Take Back Santa Cruz to task again and again for not advising their cleanup crews, as far as I know, to respect homeless camps, and that suggesting one of their big problems is illegal camping, where that phrase really conceals the fact that what they mean is all camping, because all homeless survival camping in Santa Cruz is illegal. You don't get a permit to camp in Santa Cruz. You can camp on your own private property in your own backyard or fenced inside or front yard, but homeless people, by definition, don't own homes, so they don't have those options. And again, she supports background checks for people who receive services. I suppose that would mean background checks for every Social Security recipient, every elderly person, every disabled youth. She hasn't really thought this one through, I don't think, too carefully, if my understanding is correct. But it also looks like this article has been cut down. She does support continuing funding to fund shelter and meals. It funds a very small amount of shelter, and it does fund a regular breakfast and dinner out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which, of course, is a way of keeping the homeless out of the downtown. Isn't really a way of primarily helping homeless people. Here we go. She does, I'm wrong, it doesn't. It hasn't been cut back. Only my comments have been cut back. She encourages town hall-style meetings where the public can interact with city leaders on a wide variety of topics rather than be restricted to 2 or 3 minutes of remarks. And I couldn't agree with her more on that issue. And if you look at the comments, there's a lot of supporters for her. And everybody says, go, 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 Pamela, Johnny at the Harbor. Some old-time homeless bigots. And there's a wise writer who probably, I don't agree with anything else, but who says that Pamela proves you don't need to be on the council to make a big impact, and it isn't clear that she will have a greater impact when elected to the council. She might be more powerful and effective if she isn't. People on the join the council thinking they'll be able to devote time to a single issue, but that never works out. Members of the council have too many other issues to keep on top of their time, and effort in the particular area becomes diluted. It's boring work mostly, and they get to spend only a small percentage of their time on the issues they care about most. And they have to hold their tongue and watch what they say while on the council. They become politicians and speak like politicians because that's the nature of the job. It curbs their freedom of speech. They can no longer say what they really think. Putting an effective civic community activist in the city council is a great way to shut them up and make it appear as if something is being done about serious problems, when in fact great harm has been done to their cause. In any case, the hands-on nitty-gritty of Santa Cruz government is run by the city manager, not the city council. If you want a change regarding how the city's run, don't bark up the wrong tree. And that's a comment by John Hernland, and he's absolutely right. No question about it. That's what I've always told Steve Plaich and others who are running for city council, that it's just, you know, it's a nice forum. But if you get there, you're going to be, well, you'll be hamstrung mainly because you don't have, if you want to really get anything done, you need a huge amount of public support outside city council, not just enough to elect you, but enough to effectuate change with mass protests and lawsuits and everything you can think of. And you also need a staff independent of the real power at city council, the city manager and his staff, so that you don't have to rely on them. And that is something I don't think anybody has ever had. So it's not something that is advisable for somebody who really wants to be an activist and really wants to change things. And you can read more about her online, the City Council and the Santa Cruz Sentinel website. And unfortunately, you won't find my comments there, but then again, I've just made them, so you don't need to look for them. You tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. And we've got about 15 minutes left in the show. The House has passed the 2013 Pentagon defense, meaning war, appropriation on a vote of 326-90. The legislation includes funding for critical national security needs, which means horseshit. It means more power to police agencies to assess what they think are the local national security needs, and the military elite to pursue their needs. $518.1 billion in non-war defense spending. That sounds like one of those contradictions in terms. And $87.7 billion for overseas contingency operations for defense activities. You know, defending Afghanistan halfway around the world from those who are trying to get the U.S. out of Afghanistan. It takes care of our troops, according to that. And let's see if we can actually find... There's a bill report. There's a list of House-adopted amendments. But what I really want to do is find whether FAR, our representative, voted for it. And I don't see that available yet. I suspect he was one of 90 who may have voted against it. Half the time he votes for these things, half the time he votes against them. I don't know what he's doing now. It's an election year, and so this is, you know, it's hard to kind of guess what the deal is going to be. But I do not know. And it does say that spending like drunken... This is what one critic writes. Spending like drunken sailors with no thought of tomorrow
Congress added more than $3 billion beyond what the Obama administration had requested. The $519 billion spending bill, which was $1 billion over the Pentagon's 2012 budget, was approved on a lopsided bipartisan 326-90 vote, with 11 Republicans voting no and 101 Democrats voting yes. The federal government's appropriation process of spending American taxpayer funds began in 1789 when the House Ways and Means Committee initially granted broad authority over the essential functions of revenue, banking, and all general appropriations, made its first appropriation commitment of $639,000. By 1865, the oldest committee in Congress split its functions and created an appropriation committee with nine members. I don't know if this is terribly relevant here. In what became a measure for monitoring U.S. war expenditures, appropriations dropped in 1866 to $520,000, when it had been $1.3 million during the Civil War, just as appropriations rose in 1899 to fund the Spanish-American War, $605,000, dropping to $485,000 by 1902, after they'd murdered all those Filipinos, at the war's end. Gearing up for a more substantial battle, appropriations to fund World War I grew to $18 billion in 1917 before dropping to $2.9 billion in 1927. After World War II and the rise of the military-industrial complex, the Pentagon portion of the annual appropriations continues to dominate the U.S. budget. Immediately prior to consideration of the Pentagon's 2013 budget, it was with little irony that Representative Joe Hensarling of Texas introduced the Sequestration Transparency Act, requiring the president to report the proposed $1 trillion program cuts over the next 10 years to Congress if sequestration becomes automatic on January 2nd of next year. And I'm not quite sure what sequestration is, and so I'll have to research that one or ignore it, which is more likely. And there's a lot more discussion of the war appropriation, but it's passed. Those boys are going to be sending and more money abroad to kill, or more money at home to send more troops abroad to kill more people. It's just the way it's going. Gosh, you know, we're reaching the end of the end of the program, and I have got to play a few interviews because it's been me the entire time, and I just, you know, wonderful as I am, there are other people here who need to have a little be given a little opportunity. Let's try.
So, no tickets yet in Santa Cruz.
I got one. I was sitting over there at by the trash can on the corner of Laurel and Pacific.
Taco Bell?
Yeah, in front of Taco Bell. And I was sitting there, and the cop came up. I lit a cigarette while he was talking to me. Even though I was on Taco Bell property, he still wrote me a ticket for smoking on Pacific.
And who was this cop, you know?
No, I don't, but his name's probably on the ticket, which is in my wallet.
Now, you actually have a cigarette in hand. You're about to commit another criminal act, perhaps, about to smoke here in public?
That's about what's going to happen.
And I'm not going to be here to witness this incredible crime. Wait, it's too late. Well, there you go. Anyway, we've been talking with that master smoke sit and doggy criminal.
Luke.
Thank you, Luke. And here we are down at Pacific Avenue listening to a couple of plunkers, a banjo guy, and looks like a guitar man with a huge bass vinyl on its side here at the corner of the Soquel and Pacific, and a couple of innocent listeners sitting illegally next to the building. And so
here's the audio of a video off of Occupy Santa Cruz, which was taken by Alex DeRosi, originally posted on Indie Bay, and then cleaned up and posted on Occupy Santa Cruz website, OccupySantaCruz.org. It's under the heading Santa Cruz DA befriends the usual suspects. It shows Bob Lee talking to me, Gail Page, Ed Fry, and Becky Johnson. Actually, there are a number of others here, too. And here is the soundtrack for that.
I actually played this, and you can go to it online at Occupy Santa Cruz. This is a better version of it, though, and it may be more audible to folks listening. It could be the basis for some significant action in the future, because it's both revealing and in many ways improper, but check it out. You know, it sounded a lot better when I was playing it earlier, and I think there's a problem with the connection. So in order to hear this, you have to really go online to hear it. And you can hear it. It's pretty clear and has been cleaned up, but it is not cleaned up enough. If it's cleaned up, it's not getting across. So my apologies for raising your hopes. But you can go to Occupy Santa Cruz, look for the D.A. Bob Lee confronts the usual suspect story, and then go to the large video replay, not the initial story, but the large video replay. There are two different places you could click. Go to the second one, and you'll get a better audio rendition. Let's listen to a few more interviews, and then I'll be moving along, and so will you.
Some folks eating soup. What looks like it, you know, at least four or five homeless people here, amazingly enough. But again, homeless activists do outnumber the homeless people. So, right. So we're talking to an anonymous person. Give us a first name or something. Or you can make up your name. We'll call you Black Hat because your hat is black.
Sure. Thank you very much.
All right.
Well, it's been about 3 weeks. They went up to the camp, my camp, and it was very clean, and they didn't move anything because it's like at a 90-degree angle, and I know it's very hard to take anything up or bring anything down. So what they did was they cut the strings to the tent poles, and so it laid my whole camp down.
Did you see them do this, or did you just come back and find it done?
Back, and they did it.
Do you know, was it Rangers, was it sheriffs, was it cops?
It's probably the Rangers because the Rangers left the note.
What did the note say?
It said you had 2 weeks to vacate, and it was less than a week that they went and cut the strings. And the camp is really, really clean. I know that they didn't. They could have cleaned it out, took all my stuff, but they didn't. They left everything as it was, but just cut the strings on the tent.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, very hard to restring tent poles.
And how long have you lived up there?
Well, off and on. I was out there for a year on the other side of the cemetery about a year and a half ago, and then my significant other went to jail. So instead of paying rent, I don't like being by myself, so I'd rather be out with everybody than be home alone and get really manic depressant. And so I went camping.
And so from this last time, so how long have you been out?
This has been 5 months.
And have you gotten camping tickets or harassment at any point during this period?
Just to move. Just to move.
On this one occasion or at other occasions?
Oh, other occasions. Other occasions, yeah.
Now, is that because you're, like, parked in the middle of Highway 1, or is it because Rangers or others have been seeking you out, or?
I believe that it's because it's summer and the camp, they have kids and children go out and they go hiking, or the adults bring their children and they don't want us to be visible.
Well, you're demoralizing influence on the younger generation.
I do believe it because when I was out there before and I was like out there, way up there, you couldn't see me. I wasn't bothered. And I came down a little bit and I've been bothered more because I can't climb it high anymore. I'm not that young anymore.
But you're still good looking.
Thank you.
Now, have you had any other problems? You're not pregnant yourself.
No.
You've been outside.
Yeah, I've been eyeballed. You know, when they look at me, they watch me go up. I wait till they're, like, gone, dark.
Mm-hmm.
And it's out of inconvenience, but, you know, I got to do what I have to do.
Has there been a change in the last few months in how you've been treated or not?
Oh, absolutely.
And how has that happened? What changes that?
I believe every other day, instead of like every 2 months, every 3 months, it's every other day. They're just coming out and making themselves aware that they're going to be moving us.
But they're moving you to where?
To no man's land. We have nowhere to go. I was at the loft at the River Street Shelter, and I was there for at least 2 weeks, and I went to stay with my son for 1 day, and I lost all of my materials. Everything, my belongings, were thrown in a dumpster and smashed in a compactor.
And was this because you weren't watching them every minute, or because they were threatening you? Why did that happen?
That happened because I was tired of moving. It's hard to move your camp. It's hard to keep moving.
Oh, you mean your stuff, the homeless service center didn't throw your stuff in the dumpster?
Yeah, the homeless service. Yeah, I've moved all my stuff from my camp to the loft.
Okay.
And they were supposed to hold things for 10 days.
Right.
And they absolutely positively held it for 2 afternoons and 1 evening. And then it was dispensed.
And what kind of stuff was destroyed?
Everything that I had from my stores that I put in my tent for me and my son, from shovels to clothing, shoes, a digital camera, chargers, everything I've had, magazines, letters, pictures, old antiques, my little grandma had from a long time ago, little Hamel antiques and stuff like that.
And what did you attempt to...
I'm right now talking to one of the managers there, and I have a claim filed, and they're supposed to reimburse me at least one-fourth of it. And it's just
what
not...
What do you estimate it's worth?
Well, just my son's stuff is like worth about maybe $600. That's not including mine.
Mm-hmm.
My stuff, I don't really shop a lot, but a lot of things were like lotions, shampoos, conditioners, remedies, anything that you save, like from your fingernails to your hair, everything that I've had for so long. And I've had, from one end to the other, it would be like my jewelry, my beads. I do a lot of bead work. And in one corner was my fingernail polishes and my nail rivers, and the other corner was my electronics. And then
it all got dumped.
It all got dumped.
You know, we're doing what we have here. We were planning to do today, and it looks like it may or may not happen. But we're looking for opinion about what are the... It sounds like one of your concerns is that the homeless lack of services center, as I call it, be more accountable. But what kind of rights do you think homeless people need to have restored that they don't have right now? I mean, we're talking, you know, do they have the right? Should they have the right to sleep at night? Should they have the right to camp somewhere, if not, at least somewhere? Should they have the right to be in public spaces? What are the most important things you think that we should be bringing up?
I think we should be bringing up is that we don't want to be where we're at the moment, but it's like sometimes we sacrifice things to do what we're doing to be here than to go through other situations. And I would not put it past them. The reason why they don't want us to do these things is because it's hard for people to pick up after themselves. I have picked up for many, many, many people, and I realize a lot of it is they think that we are going to pollute the area or make the area look bad or hoard things that we don't need, and if we don't need something, you shouldn't have it.
Now, would you suggest then maybe a no littering law or no litter clean up your area law rather than a no sleeping law?
I would say it would be open to sleep as long as you picked up and left it the way you came, like if you were never there. That is what I believe in.
So, if you were to look, Rhode Island recently passed a Bill of Rights for homeless people. What kind of rights should homeless people have? Should they have the right to sleep legally somewhere if they clean up the area they're in?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe they should be able to sleep anywhere as long as they don't look as though they are collecting hoarders. So a lot of people that you look at know that they're cleaning up because people bring stuff up, but they don't take stuff out.
How about the right to, let's say, peacefully ask for spare change?
People ask for spare change all the time. I always say looks are deceiving, because I could use spare change too, and I just say don't judge a book by its cover. So yeah, if somebody needs a quarter or a dollar, a cigarette.
Being harassed? Have you heard of harassment happening? Is that a problem in Santa Cruz, people being harassed for panhandling?
No, I've never been harassed for panhandling.
How about others who?
No.
Okay, what about being in the parks after dark? Is that an issue?
I think it's an issue as far as our violence is concerned, as far as how things are going right now, because a lot of things right now have changed from 3 years ago, 4 years ago. My son came back and he's been here for 3 months and he cannot believe the violence.
So what kind of changes does he see and do you see, if there are changes?
That people are getting to where they're surviving, you know, whatever they can get. Whether
have you been the victim of violence yourself?
I have. Yes, recently. And
what kind of violence, if I may ask?
Asked for my radio and my laptop on the levee, as far and my bike before, and I sit there and I'm sorry to say, but yeah, I told my son to carry a weapon no matter what you do. You carry a weapon on this levee if it's any time after dark. Do not walk on that levee without a weapon.
And are you currently sleeping on the levee yourself? You don't have to answer that question.
Yes, I am.
And how long have you been doing that?
I've been doing that for a week now.
And have you been threatened with violence or any kind?
No, compassion. The people out here that are homeless are very compassionate. They help one another. They feed one another. They will help whatever necessary need that they have available. If they have it, they will give it to you.
So as I understand it, you suggest the things that we should concern ourselves if we want a Bill of Rights in Santa Cruz for homeless people is the right to sleep if you clean up your own area, the right to peacefully ask for spare change if you're not abusive, the right... What about the right to be in public spaces?
It depends on how public it is. I wouldn't say so much as far as going towards...
Right. How about the right to sit down on Pacific Avenue?
Yes, the benches are all gone. Yes.
Mostly gone.
Mostly gone, yes. But I do miss those. I really do. I really do miss that. And it is... I think you should be able to sit down as long as you're not loitering, as long as you're not just... causing havoc.
So do you want to be... We're going to be actually now... talking with... What's your name? Jeff. And Jeff, what are the principal problems you and others have faced outside that need to be... that have to do with civil rights violations as far as you're concerned?
Well, it's just, you know, if you're clean and you're not messing up the environment, there's no reason why they should vouch in and ticket you and make you move.
Have you been having that kind of problem yourself?
Yeah, I wake up to that all frequently.
Now, for example, in the last week, has that happened to you?
Oh, yeah, at least 5 out of 7 days.
And were you, like, parking in the middle of the street down at Pacific Avenue?
No.
Were people seeking you out to get rid of your campsite or your ability to sleep where you were sleeping?
No, I was sleeping on the concrete.
And, did people seek you out to find that, or did you, were you in the way of something?
No, I wasn't in the way. I was actually out of the way, kind of hidden.
And who was it?
They had to come and search through around.
Did they give you tickets?
Most of the time, no, but yeah, a couple times I did get tickets.
And do these Parks and Rec people, are these cops, are these deputies?
Officers.
SCBD? And what time of day or night did this happen?
Normally in, probably, if you sleep too late, they catch you like 8 p.m. or sometimes around, a few times were around 3 or 4 a.m.
And how many tickets have you gotten in the last, let's say, month?
A couple, two, probably.
And what's your response to these tickets? How do you deal with them?
Well, I'm going to go down to the shelter and see if I can get a waiver at least on one.
Have you been able to do that before?
Yeah. I think in 1 or 2 a year, I'm not sure.
And do you remember what? You just walk in and ask? Or
go in the front building and just fill out some paperwork and you petition to get out for a waiver.
Any other thoughts about what you think? In Rhode Island, they passed a Bill of Rights for the homeless, the right not to be discriminated against in housing, the right not to be harassed for sleeping if you're not violating other laws, the right to your personal property not being seized. What's your thoughts about what's most important here in Santa Cruz that needs to be emphasized?
Basically keeping the peace.
And how can that be done?
To keep the peace. Maintaining our composures. You know, we don't have to make our personality bleed out so much or be so pushy with it. But, you know, I mean, I see where we need to stand as individuals and represent.
I appreciate that. Now, what we've been talking with?
Jeff.
And thank you, Jeff. And
How's the soup? It's excellent. I'm going to have to try some. So any thoughts about what kind of rights homeless people need that they're not getting here in Santa Cruz, if any?
Basically, I think that people's rights are in the worst way, or the worst example, or how people that are making money, when their money, the stream of their money is interrupted, they take action. And a lot of this action is because they because
afraid of losing their profits.
Yes, and the unknown, really, in a deeper personal sense. And they've done away with a lot of good people that way, and people's human rights are nibbled on at a lot of levels. And
have the nibbles turned to larger bites in Santa Cruz recently, or is it just still the same old nibbling?
Well, this thing is going on all over the world. You know, wherever you have people that are capitalizing on the situation, once they get in a comfortable situation, they start hurting other people.
So what kind of problems have you had? Are you outside yourself?
Yeah, I'm between hotels right now. But
have you been hassled by the police?
Well, I guess the four tickets I've gotten are.
Did you deserve those tickets? Are you a bad boy?
Actually, I feel that I'm innocent, you know.
What were the tickets for?
Once being on a bicycle on the sidewalk, which I was stopped. I stopped to get out of danger. But the other ones are
What kind of time of day did you get these tickets? Nighttime or daytime?
One ticket on the bicycle was daytime, but the other ones were around after 12, when there were no witnesses.
Talking about midnight.
After 12 midnight, and two of them were around 3 or 4 in the morning.
How long ago were these tickets given to you?
1 or 2 months, 3 months ago.
And have you had this? How long have you been outside?
When the record service took my RV, that was 2002 or 2003.
It's been about 10 years.
I went to Europe, and then I've been in the surreal elements that way. But I think I should buy another RV after I get retirement pretty soon.
So you've been outside essentially for 10 years, or you were in Europe for a while?
No, this time around I was homeless over there too, and I met a lot of people that were feeding the hungry there too. I mean, feeding the homeless, and they are wonderful people. I bless them all the time.
What countries in Europe were you in?
This time around, I just went to England and Spain.
And how do they compare with the U.S. for treatment of people who are outside?
I think that it's very similar. It's very similar. People that have this kind-heartedness to defeat
hey,
others, they're pretty much on the right side, you know.
And so it's not any worse, not any better here. What's the feeling compared to Santa Cruz? How about the police in those areas? How do they compare with Santa Cruz?
Well, because I've been to Europe since, the first time I went to Europe was in 78. To me, it has gone through this dramatic change where I don't know what it is, Americanization of Europe now with the standards and comfort zones and stuff.
But what about the police in Europe the last time you were there compared with the police here in Santa Cruz? Better or worse here?
I think that the United States has lost a lot of freedom since in the last 20 years or so. But
it's true for people outside as well.
much. I think that people outside are victims, and there's been more and more victims because there's more and more comfortable people.
We've been talking with?
My name is Hector.
Thank you, Hector. Quick statement on war.
War is a lot of times created by leaders.
And sometimes the wind blows your words away. But we're a bit over time, as is, anyway. So thank you for being with me, insofar as you were, if you were, on this edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Next up is going to be another edition on Thursday, I would assume. 6 in the evening is the usual time. The Huff meets on Wednesday, 10 o'clock in the morning at the Sub Rosa Cafe on Pacific Avenue. Please do call in if you see or hear of specific instances of abuse, particularly police cracking down on homeless websites. If you hear of any homeless websites that are being taken down, I want to hear about that too. But we're actually trying to put one up. The Huff website is huffsantacruz.org. May be improving. We're going to try to add a blog so people can comment, as well as a sort of a news archive so that you can read recent stories, as well as you can check out old Huff emails where we send out to the Huff email list what's happening at different places in the country, sometimes even in the world. India declared a right to sleep for homeless people recently, sort of putting them ahead of Santa Cruz, surprisingly enough, or maybe not so surprising. I'll be back, and if you have stuff to report before, please call me on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's about it. Coming up next on Free Radio, it'll be Making Contact, followed by a few other shows, and then after that, Law and Disorder. If you want more information about Free Radio Santa Cruz, go to the website freakradio.org, F-R-E-A-K-R-A-D-I-O, freakradio.org. You can find out the schedule. You can find out how to donate. You can find out, catch some archives of some of the shows. These shows are mostly archived on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, as I mentioned before, under the name Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Thanks for being with me again, and talk at you again later.